two glass panes, with dirt in between and little tunnels from cell to cell. When I was a kid, I had an ant colony. But once, some of our 4 to 6 year olds built in a collegiarium with 6 foot plastic panels and grooved aluminum bars to hold corners and top down. They put it out on the sand. There was a mud puddle against one wall so you could see what was going on underwater. Sometimes segment worms crawling through the reddish earth hit the sides so their tunnels were visible for a few inches. In hot weather, the inside of the plastic got coated with mist and droplets. The small round leaves on the litmus vines changed from blue to pink as clouds coursed the sky and the pH of the photosensitive soil shifted slightly. The kids would run out before dawn and belly down naked on the cool sand with their chins on the backs of their hands and stare in the half-dark till the red mill wheel of Sigma lifted over the bloody sea. The sand was maroon then, and the flowers of the crystal plants looked like rubies in the dim light of the giant sun. Up the beach, the jungle would start to whisper, while somewhere an anteater would start wobbling. The kids would giggle and poke each other and crowd closer. Then Sigma Prime, the second member of the binary, would flare like thermite on the water, and crimson clouds would bleach from coral through peach to foam. The kids, half on top of each other, lay now like a pile of copper ingots with sun streaks in their hair, even on little Antony, my oldest, whose hair was black and curly like bubbling oil, like his mother's. The down on the small of his 2-year-old back was a white haze across the copper, if you looked that close to see. More children came to squat and lean on their knees or kneel with their noses an inch from the walls to watch like young magicians as things were born, grew, matured, and other things were born. Enchanted at their own construction, they stared at the miracles in their live museum. A small red seed lay camouflaged in the silt by the lake puddle. One evening, as white Sigma Prime left the sky violet, it broke open into a brown larva as long and of the same color as the first joint of Antony's thumb. It flipped and swirled in the mud a couple of days, then crawled to the first branch of the nearest crystal plant to hang exhausted, head down from the tip. The brown flesh hardened, thickened, grew black, shiny. Then, one morning, the children saw the onyx chrysalis crack, and by second dawn there was an emerald-eyed flying lizard buzzing at the plastic panels. The speed haze creature budded at the corner for a few days, then settled at last to crawling around the broad leaves of the miniature shade palms. When the season grew cool, and there was the annual debate over whether the kids should put tunics on, they never stayed in them for more than 20 minutes anyway, the jewels of the crystal plant misted, their facets coarsened, and they fell like gravel. There were little 4-cup sloths, too, big as a 6-year-old's fist. Most of the time, they pressed their velvety bodies against the wall and stared longingly across the sand with their retractable eye clusters. Then, 2 of them swelled for about 3 weeks. We thought at first it was some bloating infection, but one evening, there were a couple of litters of white velvet balls half hidden by the low leaves of the shade palms. The parents were occupied now and didn't pine to get out. There was a rock half in and half out of the puddle, I remember, covered with what I'd always called mustard moss when I saw it in the wild. Once it put out a brush of white hairs, and one afternoon the children ran to collect all the adults they could drag over.
Oh, look there! Look!
The hairs had detached themselves and were walking around the water's edge, turning end over end along the soft soil. I had to leave for work in a few minutes and haul some spare drive parts out to Tau Ceti, but when I got back 5 days later, the hairs had taken root, thickened, and were already putting out the small round leaves of litmus vines. Among the new shoots, lying on her back, claws curled over her wrinkled belly, eyes cataract like the foggy jewels of the crystal plant, she dropped her wings like cellophane days ago, was the flying lizard. Her pearl throat still pulsed, but as I watched, it stopped. Before she died, however, she had managed to deposit, nearly camouflaged in the silt by the puddle, a scattering of red seeds. I remember getting home from another job where I'd been doing the maintenance on the shuttle boats for a crew putting up a ring station to circle a planet that was itself circling Aldebaran. I was gone a long time on that one. When I left the landing complex and wandered out toward the tall weeds at the edge of the beach, I still didn't see anybody. Which was just as well, because the night before I'd put on a real winner with the crew to celebrate the completion of the station. That morning I'd taken a couple of more drinks at the landing bar to undo last night's damage. It never works. The swish of frond on frond was like clashed rasps. The sun on the sand reached out two fingers of pure glare and tried to gouge my eyes. I was glad the home compound was deserted, because the kids would have asked questions I didn't want to answer. The adults wouldn't say anything, which was harder to answer than questions. Then, down by the ecologerium, a child screeched, and screeched again. Then Anthony came hurtling toward me, half running, half on all fours, and flung himself on my leg.
Oh, da, da, why, oh, why, da?
I kicked my boots off and shrugged my shirt back at the compound porch, but I still had my overalls on. Anthony had two fists full of my pants leg and wouldn't let go. Hey, kid boy, what's the matter? When I finally got him on my shoulder, he butted his blubber-wet face against my collarbone.
Oh, da, da, it's crazy, it's all crazy.
That's crazy, kid boy. Tell da. Anthony held my ear and cried while I walked down to the plastic enclosure. They put a small door in one wall and a two-number combination lock that was supposed to keep this sort of thing from happening. I guess Anthony learned the combination from watching the older kids. Or maybe he just figured it out. One of the young sloths had climbed out and wandered across the sand about 3 feet.
See, da? It crazy. It bit me. Bit me, da.
Sobs became sniffles as he showed me a puffy, bluish place on his wrist, centered on which was a tiny crescent of pinpricks. Then he pointed jerkily to the creature. It was shivering, and bloody froth sputtered from its lip flaps. All the while it was digging futilely at the sand with its clumsy cups, eyes retracted. Now it fell over, kicked, tried to right itself, breath going like a flutter valve. Can't take the heat. I reached down to pick it up. It snapped at me, and I jerked back. Sunstroke, kid boy. Yeah, it is crazy. Suddenly it opened its mouth wide, let out all its air, and didn't take in any more. It's all right now. Two more of the baby sloths were at the door, front cups over the sill, staring with bright, black eyes. I pushed them back with a piece of seashell and closed the door. Anthony kept looking at the white fur ball on the sand.
I'm crazy now?
It's dead.
Dead because it went outside, da?
Mm-hmm.
I'm crazy?
He made a fist and ground something already soft and wet around his upper lip. I decided to change the subject, which was already too close to something I didn't like to think about. Who's been taking care of you anyway? You're a mess, kid boy. Let's go and fix up that arm. They shouldn't leave a fellow your age all by himself. We started back to the compound. Those bites infect easily, and this one was swelling.
Why it go crazy? Why it die when it go outside, da?
Can't take the light. We reached the jungle. There are animals that live in shadow most of the time. The plastic cuts out the ultraviolet rays, just like the leaves that shade them when they run loose in the jungle. Sigma Prime's high on ultraviolet. That's why you're so good-looking, kid boy. I think your ma told me their nervous systems are on the surface, all that fuzz. Under the ultraviolet, the enzymes break down so quickly that... Does all this mean anything to you?
Uh-uh.
He admired his bite while we walked.
Wouldn't it be nice, da, if some of them could go outside, just a few?
That stopped me. There were sunspots on his blue-black hair. Franz reflected faint green on his brown cheek. He was grinning, little and wonderful. Something that had been anger in me a lot of times momentarily melted to raging tenderness, whirling about him like the dust in the light striking down at my shoulders, raging to protect my son. I don't know about that, kid boy.
Why not?
It might be pretty bad for the ones who had to stay inside. I mean, after a while.
Why?
I started walking again. Come on, let's fix your arm up and get you cleaned. I washed the wet stuff off his face and scraped the dry stuff from beneath it, which had been there at least 2 days. Then I got some antibiotic into him.
You smell funny, Dad.
Never mind how I smell. Let's go outside again. I put down a cup of black coffee too fast, and it and my hangover had a fight in my stomach. I tried to ignore it and do a little looking around, but I still couldn't find anybody. That got me mad. I mean, he's independent, sure, he's mine, but he's still only two. Back on the beach, we buried the dead sloth in the sand. Then I pointed out the new, glittering stalks of the tiny crystal plants. At the bottom of the pond, in the jellied mass of anti-wart eggs, you could see the tadpole forms quivering already. An orange-fringed shelf fungus had sprouted nearly 8 inches since it had been just a few black spores on a pile of dead leaves a few weeks back.
Grow up!
Anthony leaned nose and fists against the plastic.
Everything grow up and up.
That's right.
I grow.
You sure as hell do.
You grow?
Benny shook his head, twice. Once to say no, and the second time because he got such a kick from shaking his hair around. There was a lot of it.
You don't grow. You don't get any bigger. Why don't you grow?
I do too, just very slowly. Anthony turned around, leaned on the plastic, and moved one toe at a time in the sand. I can't do that. Watching me. You have to grow all the time. Not necessarily get bigger, but inside your head you have to grow, kid boy. For us human-type people, that's what's important. And that kind of growing never stops. At least it shouldn't. You can grow, kid boy, or you can die. That's the choice you've got, and it goes on all your life. He looked back over his shoulder.
Grow up. All the time. Even if they can't get up.
Yeah. And I was uncomfortable all over again. I started pulling off my overalls for something to do. Even if you can't get out. The rest got back that evening. They'd been on a group trip around the foot of the mountain. I did a little shouting to make sure my point got across about leaving Anthony alone. Didn't do much good. You know how these family arguments go.
He didn't want to come. We weren't going to force him.
So what? He's got to learn to do some things he doesn't want to do.
Like some other people I could mention.
Now, look here.
It's a healthy group. Don't you want him to grow up healthy?
I'll be happy if he just grows up, period. No food, no medical facilities.
The server was chock full of food. He knows how to use it.
Look, when I got home, the kid's arm was swollen all the way up to his elbow. And so on and so forth, with Anthony sitting in the middle, looking confused. When he got confused enough, he ended it all by announcing matter-of-factly.
That smelled funny when he came home.
Everyone got quiet. Then someone said,
Oh, Vine, you didn't come home that way again. I mean, in front of the children.
I said a couple of things I was sorry for later and stalked off down the beach on a 4-mile hike. Times I got home from work? The ecologerian? I guess I'm just leading up to this one. The particular job had taken me a hectic week to get. It was putting back together a battleship that was gutted somewhere off Oragai. Only when I got there, I found I'd already been laid off. That particular war was over. They're real quick now. So I scraped and lied and browned my way into a repair gang that was servicing a traveling replacement station. Generally had to humiliate myself to get the job because every other drive mechanic from the battleship fiasco was after it too. Then I got canned the first day because I came to work smelling funny. It took me another week to hitch a ride back to Sigma. Didn't even have enough to pay passage. But I made a deal with a pilot. I'd do half the driving for him. We were an hour out, and I was at the controls when something I'd never heard of happening happened. We came this close to ramming another ship. Consider how much empty space there is. The chances are infinitesimal. And on top of that, every ship should be broadcasting an identification beam at all times. But this big, bulbous, keeler intergalactic slid by so close I could see her through the front viewport. Our inertia system went nuts. We jerked around in the stasis whirl from the keeler. I slammed on the video intercom and shouted, You great big stupid! So mad and scared I couldn't say anything else. The Golden piloting the ship stared at me from the view screen with mildly surprised annoyance. I remember, his face was just slightly more negroid than mine. Our little Serpentina couldn't hurt him, but had we been even 100 meters closer, we might have ionized. The other pilot came bellowing from behind the sleeper curtain and started cursing me out. Damn it, it was one of those... And I lost all the profanity I knew to my rage. Golden!
This far into galactic center? Come off it! They should be hanging out around the star pit!
It was a keeler drive. It came right up in front of us! I stopped, because the control stick was shaking in my hand. You know the Serpentina colophon? They have it in the corner of the view screen and raised in plastic on the head of the control knobs of the ship. Well, it got pressed into the ham of my thumb so you could make it out for an hour. I was squeezing the control rod that tight. When he set me down, I went straight to the bar to cool off and got in a fight. When I reached the beach, I was broke, I had a bloody nose, I was sick and furious. It was just after first sunset, and the kids were squealing around the ecologerium. Then one little girl I didn't even recognize ran up to me and jerked my arm.
Da? Oh, Da, come look. The anti-warts are
I pushed her and she sat down, surprised on the sand. I just wanted to get to the water and splash something cold on my face, because every minute or so it would start to burn. Another bunch of kids grabbed me and tried to pull me over. First, I took 2 steps with them. Then I just swung my arms out. I didn't make a sound, but I put my head down and barreled against the plastic wall. Kids screamed, aluminum snapped, the plastic cracked and went down. My boots were still on, and I kicked and kicked at red earth and sand. Shade palms went down, and the leaves tore under my feet. Crystal brants broke like glass rods beneath a piece of plastic. A swarm of lizards buzzed up around my head. Some of the red was Sigma, some was what burned behind my face. I remember I was still shaking and watching water run out of the broken lake over the sand, then soak in so that the wet tongue of sand expanded a little, raised just a trifle around the edge. Then I looked up to see the kids coming back down the beach, crying, shouting, afraid and clustered around Antony's ma. She walked steadily toward me, steady because she was a woman and they were children, but I saw the same fear in her face. Antony was on her shoulder. Other grown-ups were coming behind her. Antony's ma was a biologist, and I think she had suggested the ecologerium to the kids in the first place. When she looked up from the rune I'd made, I knew I'd broken something of hers, too. An odd expression got caught in the features of her, I remember it, oh, so beautiful, face, with compassion alongside the anger, contempt alongside the fear.
Oh, for pity's sake, Vaughn, won't you ever grow up?
I opened my mouth. But everything I wanted to say was too big and stayed wedged in my throat.
Grow up?
Antony reached for a lizard that buzzed his head.
Everything, stop growing up now.
He looked down again at the wreck I'd made.
All broken. Everything get out.
He didn't mean to break it.
Then she knifed the gratitude I felt toward her with a look.
We'll put it back together.
She put Antony on the sand and picked up one of the walls. After they got started, they let me help. A lot of the plants were broken, and only the anti-warts who'd completed metamorphosis could be saved. The flying lizards were too curious to get far away, so they netted them and got them back. I guess I didn't help that much, and I wouldn't say I was sorry. They got just about everything back except the sloths. We couldn't find them at all. We searched a long time, too. The sun was down, so they should have been all right. They can't negotiate the sand with any speed, so couldn't have reached the jungle. But there were no tracks. No, nothing. We even dug in the sand to see if they'd buried themselves. Never did find them, though. It wasn't till more than a dozen years later I discovered where they went. For the present, I accepted Antony's mildly adequate statement.
They just must have got out again.
Not too long after that, I left the procreation group. Went off to work one day, didn't come back. But like I said to Antony, you either grow or die. I didn't die. Once I considered returning, but there was another war, and suddenly there wasn't anything left to return to. Some of the group got out alive. Antony and his mob didn't. I mean, there wasn't even any water left on that planet. When I finally came to the star pit myself, I hadn't had a drink in years. But working there out on the galaxy's edge did something to me, something to the part that grows I'd once talked about on the beach with Antony. If it did it to me, it's not surprising it did it to Ratlet and the rest. And I remember a black-eyed creature pressed against the plastic wall, staring across impassable sands. Perhaps it was knowing that this is as far as you could go. Perhaps it was the Golden. Golden? I hadn't even joined the group yet when I first heard the word. I was 16 and a sophomore at Luna Vocational. I was born in a city called New York on a planet called Earth. Luna is its one satellite. You've heard of the system, I'm sure. That's where we all came from. A few other things about it are well known. Unless you're an anthropologist, though, I doubt you've ever been there. It's way the hell off the main trading routes and pretty primitive. I was a drive mechanics major, on scholarship, living in and studying hard. All morning in practical theory, a ridiculous name for a ridiculous class, I thought then. We'd spent putting together a model keeler intergalactic drive. Throughout those dozens of helical inserts and super-inertia organic sensitives, I had been silently cursing my teacher, thinking, about like everybody else in the class, so what if we can fly these jalopies from one galaxy to another? Nobody will ever be able to ride in them, not with the psychic and physiologic shells hanging around this cluster of the universe. Back in the dormitory, I was lying on my bed, scraping graphite lubricant from my nails with the end of my slide rule, and half reading at a folded back copy of The Young Mechanic, when I saw the article and the pictures. Through some freakish accident, two people had been discovered who didn't crack up at 20,000 light-years off the galactic rim, who didn't die at 25,000. They were both psychological freaks with some incredible hormone imbalance in their systems. One was a little Oriental girl. The other was an older man, blonde and big bone, from a cold planet circling Cygnus Beta. Golden. They looked sullen as hell, both of them. Then there were more articles, more pictures, in the economic journals, the sociology student letters, the legal bulletins, as various fields began acknowledging the impact that the Golden and the sudden birth of intergalactic trade were having on them. The head of some commission summed it up with a statement.
Though interstellar travel has been with us for 3 centuries, intergalactic trade has been an impossibility, not because of mechanical limitations, but rather because of barriers that till now we have not even been able to define. Some psychic shock causes insanity in any human, or for that matter, any intelligent species or perceptual machine or computer that goes more than 20,000 light years from the galactic rim. Then complete physiological death as well as recording breakdown in computers that might replace human crews. Complex explanations have been offered, none completely satisfactory. But the base of the problem seems to be this. As the nature of space and time are relative to the concentration of matter in a given area of the continuum, the nature of reality itself operates by the same or similar laws. The averaged mass of all the stars in our galaxy controls the reality of our microsector of the universe. But as a ship leaves the galactic rim, reality breaks down and causes insanity and eventual death for any crew, even though certain mechanical laws, though not all, appear to remain for reasons we don't understand relatively constant. Save for a few barbaric experiments done with psychedelics at the dawn of spatial travel, we have not even developed a vocabulary that can deal with reality apart from its measurable physical expression. Yet just when we had to face the black limit of intergalactic space, bright resources glittered within. Some few of us, whose sense of reality has been shattered by infantile, childhood, or prenatal trauma, whose physiological and psychological orientation makes life in our interstellar society painful or impossible, not all, but a few of these golden...
At which point there was static or the gentleman coughed.
Can make the crossing and return.
The name Golden, sans noun, stuck. Few was the understatement of the millennium. Slightly less than one human being in 34,000 is a Golden. A couple of people had pictures of emptying all mental institutions by just shaking them out over the galactic rim. Didn't work like that. The particular psychosis and endocrine setup was remarkably specialized. Still, back then, there was excitement, wonder, anticipation, hope, admiration in the word. Admiration for the ones who could get out.
Golden?
Ratlet was working as a grease monkey out here at the Star Pit over at Polachki's.
Born with the word. Grew up with it. Weren't no first time for me. Though I remember when I was about 6, right after the last of my parents had been killed, and I was hiding out with a bunch of other lice in a broke-open packing crate in an abandoned freight yard over near the ruins of Helios on Cretan 7. That's where I was born, I think. Most of the city had been starved out by then, but somebody was getting food to us. There was this old crookback character who was hiding, too. He used to sit on top of the packing crate and bang his heels on the aluminum slats and tell us stories about the stars. Had a couple of rags held with twists of wire for clothes, missing 2 fingers off one hand. He kept plucking the loose skin under his chin with those grimy talons. And he talked about them. So I asked, "Golden what, sir?" He leaned forward so that his face was like a mahogany bruise on the evening and croaked, "They've been out, I tell you, seen more than either you or I. Human and inhuman, kid boy, mothered by women and fathered by men, still they live by their own laws and walk their own ways."
Ratlet and I were sitting under a street lamp with our feet over the edge, where the fence had broken. His hair was like breathing flame in the wind, his single earring glittered. Star-flecked infinity dropped away below our boot soles, and the wind created by the stasis field that held our atmosphere down, we call it the whirlwind out here because it's never hot and never cold and like nothing on any world, whipped his black shirt back from his bony chest as we gazed on galactic night between our knees.
I guess that was back during the second Kyber War.
Kyber War? Which one was that?
I just know it was fought over possession of a couple of tons of Dialium. That's the polarized element the Golden brought back from Loop Galaxy. They used Yadna ships to fight it. That's why it was such a bad war. I mean, worse than usual.
Yadna? That's a drive I don't know anything about.
Some Golden saw the plans for them in a civilization in Megalanic 9.
Oh, And what was Kyber?
It was a weapon, a sort of fungus the Golden brought back from some overrun planet on the rim of Andromeda. It's deadly. Only they were too stupid to bring back the antitoxin.
That's Golden for you.
Yeah. You ever notice that about Golden, Vaughn? I mean, just the word. I found out all about it once from my publisher. It's somatically unsettling.
Really? So are they. Unsettling, I mean. I just finished a rough, rough day installing a rebuilt cure in a quantum transport hell that just wasn't big enough. The Golden, having the job done, stood over my shoulder the whole time, and every hour he'd come out with a sort of added instruction that would make the next 61 minutes miserable. But I did it. The Golden paid me in cash and without a word climbed into the lift. And 2 minutes later, while I was still washing the grease off, the damn 500-ton hulk began to whistle for takeoff. Sandy, a young fellow who'd come looking for a temporary mechanics job 3 months back but hadn't given me cause to fire him yet, barely had time to pull the big Waldos out of the way and go scooting into the shock chamber when the 300-meter doofus tore loose from the grapplers. And Sandy, who, like a lot of these youngsters drifting around from job to job, is usually sort of quiet and vague, got loud and specific.
2,000 pounds of non-shockproof equipment out there. Ruin it all if he could. I'm not expendable. I don't care what these Golden...
The ship hove off where only the Golden go. I just flipped on the not open sign, left the rest of the grease where it was, left the hangar and hunted up Ratlet. So, there we were, under that street lamp, sitting on the edge in the whirlwind.
Golden. It would be much easier to take if it were grammatically connected to something. Golden ones, or golden people. Or even one gold, two golden.
Male golden, female golden.
It's something like that. It's not an adjective, and it's not a noun. My publisher told me that for a while it was written with a dash after it, and that it stood for whatever it might modify.
I remembered the dash. It was an uneasy joke, a fill-in for that cough. Golden what? People had already started to feel uncomfortable. Then it went past joking and back to just golden.
Just think about that, Vime. Just golden, one, two, or three of them.
That's something to think about, kid boy. Ratlet had been six during the Kyber War. Square that and add it once again for my age now. Ratlet? Double six and add one. I like kids, and they like me. But that may be because my childhood left me a lot younger at 42 than I should be. Ratlet's had left him a lot older than any 13-year-old has a right to be.
No golden took part in the war.
They never do. I watched his thin fingers get all tangled together. After two divorces, my mother ran off with a salesman and left me and four siblings with an alcoholic out for a year. Yeah, I still have divorces, monogamous marriages and stuff like that where I was born. Like I say, it's pretty primitive. I left home at 15, made it through vocational school on my own, and learned enough about what makes things fly to end up, after that disastrous marriage I told you about earlier, with my own repair hangar on the Star Pit. Compared with Ratlet, I had a stable childhood. That's right, he lost the last parent he remembered when he was six. At seven, he was convicted of his first felony, after escaping from Cretan 7. But part of his treatment at hospital, come reform school, come prison, was to have the details lifted from his memory.
Did something to my head back there. That's why I could never learn to read, I think.
For the next couple of years, he ran away from one foster group after the other. When he was 11, some guy took him home from Play Planet, where he'd been existing under the boardwalk, on discarded hot dogs, souvlaki, and falafel.
Fat, smoked, perfumed cigarettes. Name is Vivian?
Turned out to be the publisher. Ratlet stayed for 3 months, during which time he dictated a novel to Vivian.
Protecting my honor. Well, I had to do something to keep him busy.
The book sold a few hundred thousand copies as a precocious curiosity among many, but Ratlet had split. The next year he was involved as a shill in some illegality I never understood. He didn't either.
But I bet I made a million, Vime. I earned at least a million.
It's possible. At 13, he still couldn't read or write, but his travels had gained him fair fluency in three languages. A couple of weeks ago, he'd wandered off a stellar tramp, dirty and broke, here at the Star Pit, and I'd gotten him a job as a grease monkey over at Polachki's. He leaned his elbows on his knees, his chin in his hands.
Vime, it's a shame.
What's a shame, kid boy?
To be washed up at my age, a has-been. To have to grapple with the fact that this is it.
He was talking about Golden again. You still have a chance. Most of the time it doesn't come out till puberty.
I've been pubescent since I was nine, Buster.
Excuse me.
I feel cramped in, Vime. There's all that night out there to grow up in, to explore.
There was a time when the whole species was confined to the surface, give or take a few feet up and down, of a single planet. You've got a whole galaxy to run around in. You've seen a lot of it, yeah, but not all.
But there are billions of galaxies out there. I want to see them. In all the stars around here, there hasn't been one life form discovered that's based on anything but silicon or carbon. I overheard two Golden in a bar once talking. There's something in some galaxy out there that's as big as a star and neither alive nor dead and sings. I want to hear it, Vine.
Ratlet, you can't fight reality.
Oh, go to sleep, Grandpa.
He closed his eyes and bent his head back until the cords of his neck quivered.
What is it that makes a Golden? A combination of physiological and psychological... what?
It's primarily some sort of hormonal imbalance, as well as an environmentally conditioned thalamic personality response.
Yeah. And that X-chromosome heredity nonsense they just connected it up with a few years back. But all I know is that they can take the stasis shift from galaxy to galaxy, where you and I, Vine, if we get more than 20,000 light years off the rim, we're dead.
Insane at 20,000, dead at 25.
The same difference. Oh, you know, I stole the Golden Belt? I rolled it off a staggering slob about a week ago who came out of a bar and collapsed on the corner. I went across the pit to Calle J, where no one knows me, and wore around for a few hours just to see if I felt different.
Ratlet had lengths of gut that astounded me about once a day. You did?
I didn't. But people walking around me did. Wearing that 2-inch band of yellow metal around my waist, nobody in the world could tell I wasn't a Golden. Just walking by on the street without talking to me a while or making hormone tests. And wearing that belt, I learned just how much I hated Golden. Because I could suddenly see in almost everyone who came by how much they hated me while I had that metal belt on. I threw it over the edge. But maybe I'll steal another one.
You really hate them, Ratlet?
Sure,
I talk about them. Sometimes they're a pain to work for, but it's not their fault we can't take the reality shift.
I'm just a child, incapable of such fine reasoning. I hate them.
You look back at the night.
How can you stand to be trapped by anything, Vaughn?
Three memories crowded into my head when he said that. First, I was standing at the railing of the East River, runs past this New York I was telling you about, at midnight, looking at the illuminated dragon of the Manhattan Bridge that spanned the water, then at the industrial fires flickering in bright, smoky Brooklyn, and then at the template of Mercury street lamps behind me bleaching out the playground and most of Houston Street, then at the reflection in the water, here like crinkled foil, there like glistening rubber. At last, looked up at the midnight sky itself. It wasn't black, but dead pink without a star. This glittering world made the sky a roof that pressed down on me so I almost screamed. That time, the next night, I was 27 light-years away from Sol on my first star run. Second, I was visiting my mother after my first few years out. I was looking for something in the closet when this contraption of plastic straps and buckles fell on my head. What's this, Ma? And she smiled with a look of idiot nostalgia.
Why, that's your little harness, Vimey. Your first father and I would take you on picnics up a Bear Mountain and put you in that and tie you to a tree with about 10 feet of cord so you wouldn't get lost.
I didn't hear the rest because of the horror that suddenly flooded me, thinking of myself tied up in that thing. Okay, I was 20 and had just joined that beautiful procreation group a year back on Sigma and was the proud father of three and expecting two more. The 163 of us had a whole beach and 9 miles of jungle and half a mountain to ourselves. Maybe I was seeing Antony, caught up in that thing, trying to catch a bird or a beetle or a wave, with only 10 feet of cord. I hadn't worn clothes for anything but work in a 12-month, and I was chomping to get away from that incredible place I'd grown up in, called an apartment, and back to wives, husbands, kids, and civilization. Anyway, it was pretty terrible. Third, it was after I had left the pro group, fled them, I suppose, guilty and embarrassed over something I couldn't name, still having nightmares once a month that woke me screaming about what was going to happen to the kids, even though I knew one point of group marriage was to prevent the loss of one, two, or three parents being traumatic, still wondering if I wasn't making the same mistakes my parents made, hoping my brood wouldn't turn out like me, or worse, like the kids you sometimes read about in the paper, like Ratlet, though I hadn't met him yet. Horribly suspicious that no matter how different I tried to be from my sires, it was just the same thing all over again. Anyway, I was on the ship, bringing me to the star pit for the first time. I'd gotten talking to a Golden, who, as Golden go, was a pretty regular gal. We'd been discussing inter- and intergalactic drives. She was impressed I knew so much. I was impressed that she could use them and know so little. She was digging in a very girl way the 6'4", 210-pound drive mechanic with mildly grimy fingernails that was me. I was digging in a very boy way the slim, amber-eyed young lady who had seen it all. From the view deck, we watched the immense artificial disk of the star pit approach, when she turned to me and said in a voice that didn't sound cruel at all.
This is as far as you go, isn't it?
And I was frightened all over again, because I knew that on about 9 different levels, she was right. Ratliff said,
I know what you're thinking.
A couple of times when he felt like being quiet and I felt like talking, I may have told him more than I should have.
Well, cue that for me, Dad. That's how trapped I feel.
I laughed, and Ratliff looked very young again. Come on, let's take a walk.
Yeah. I want to go see Allegra.
I'll walk you far as Calle G, then I'm going to go to bed.
I wonder what Allegra thinks about this business. I always find Allegra a very good person to talk to. Well, not to put you down, but her experiences are a little more up-to-date than yours. But you have to admit, she has a modern point of view. Plus the fact that she's older.
Older than Ratliff, anyway. She was 15. I don't think being trapped ever really bothered her that way, which may be a place to take a lesson from. By Ratliff's standards, Allegra had a few things over me. In my youth, kids took to dope in their teens, 20s. Allegra was born with a 300-milligram-a-day habit on a bizarre narcotic that combined the psychedelic qualities of the most powerful hallucinogens with the addictiveness of the strongest depressants. I can sympathize. Allegra's mother was addicted, and the tolerance was passed with the blood plasma through the placental wall. Ordinarily, a couple of complete transfusions at birth would have gotten the newborn child straight, but Allegra was also a highly projective telepath. She projected the horrors of birth, the glories of her infantile, hallucinated world on befuddled doctors. She was given her drug. Without too much difficulty, she managed to be given her drug every day since. Once I asked Allegra when she'd first heard of Golden, and she came back with this horror story. A lot were coming back from Tiber 44 cluster with psychic shock. The mental condition of Golden is pretty delicate, and sometimes very minor conflicts nearly ruin them. Anyway, the government that was sponsoring the importation of micro-micro-surgical equipment from some tiny planet in that galaxy, to protect its interests, hired Allegra, age 8, as psychiatric therapist.
I'd concretize their fantasies and make them work them through. In just a couple of hours, I'd have them back to their old, mean, stupid selves again. Some of them were pretty nice when they came to me.
But there was a lot of work for her. Projective telepaths are rare. So they started withholding her drug to force her to work harder, then rewarding her with increased dosage.
Up till then, I might have kicked it. But when I came away, they had me on double what I used to take. They pushed me past the point where withdrawal would be fatal. But I could have kicked it up till then, Vine.
That's right. Age 8. Oh, yeah. The drug was imported by Golden from Cancer 9, and most of it goes through the Star Pit. Allegra came here because illegal imports are easier to come by, and you can get it for just about nothing, if you want it. Golden don't use it. The wind lessened as Ratliff and I started back. Ratliff began to whistle. In Calle K, the first night lamp had broken, so the level street was a tunnel of black. Ratliff, where do you think you'll be in, oh, say, 5 years?
Quiet. I'm trying to get to the end of the street without bumping into the walls or tripping on something or some other catastrophe. If we get through the next 5 minutes all right, I'll worry about the next 5 years.
Trip? Bump the walls?
I'm listening for echoes.
I put my hands in my overall pouch and went on quietly while Ratliff did the bat bit. Then there was a catastrophe, though I didn't realize it at the time. Into the circle of light from the remaining lamp at the other end of the street walked a golem. His hands went up to his face, and he was laughing. The sound skittered in the street. His belt was low on his belly, the way the really down and broke. I just thought of a better way to describe him. The resemblance struck me immediately. He looked like Sandy, my mechanic, who is short, 24 years old, muscled like an ape, and wears his worn-out work clothes even when he's off duty.
I just want this job for a while, boss. I'm not staying out here at the Star Pit. As soon as I save up a little, I'm going to make it back in toward Galactic Center. It's funny out here. Like dead.
He gazes up through the opening in the hangar roof where there are no clouds and no stars either.
Yeah, I'm just gonna be out here for a little while.
Fine with me, kid boy. That was 3 months back, like I say. He's still with me. He works hard, too, which puts him a cut above a lot of characters out here. There's something about Sandy. On the other hand, Sandy's face is also hacked up with acne. His hair is always napped short over his wide head. But in these aspects, the golem was exactly Sandy's opposite, come to think of it. There was still something about him. The golem staggered, went down on his knees, still laughing, then collapsed. By the time we reached him, he was silent. With the toe of his boot, Ratliff nudged the hand from the belt buckle. It flopped, palm up, on the pavement. The little fingernail was 3/4 of an inch long, the way a lot of the Golden wear it. Like his face, the tips of Sandy's fingers are all masticated wrecks. Still something.
Now, isn't that something? Well, what do you want to do with him, Vine?
Nothing. Let him sleep it off.
We'll just leave him so somebody can come along and steal his belt? Well, I'm not that nasty.
Weren't you just telling me how much you hated Golden?
I'd be nasty to whoever stole the belt and wore it. Nobody but a Golden should be hated that much.
Ratlet, let's go. But he had already kneeled down and was shaking his shoulder.
Let's get into Allegra's and find out what's the matter with him.
He's just drunk.
Nope, because he don't smell funny.
Look, get back. I hoisted the Golden up and laid him across my shoulder, fireman's carry. You start moving. I think you're crazy.
Thanks. Hey, maybe he'll be grateful and lay some lepta on me for taking him in off the street.
You don't know Golden. But if he does, split it with me.
Oh, sure.
2 blocks later, we reached Allegra's place. The Golden was light, so I didn't have much trouble. Halfway up the tilting stairs, Ratlet said,
"She's in a good mood."
I guess she is. The weight across my shoulders was becoming pleasant. I can't describe Allegra's place. I can describe a lot of places like it. And I can describe it before she moved in because I knew a derelict named Drunk Roach who slept on the floor before she did. You know what never-wear plastics look like when they wear out? What non-rust metals look like when they rust through? It was a shabby, cracked wall cubicle with dirt in the corners and scars on the window panes when Drunk Roach had his pile of blankets in the corner. But since the hallucinating projective telepath took it over, who knows what it had become? Ratlet opened the door on an explosion of classical beauty.
Come in.
Accompanied by symphonic arrangements scored on 24 staves with full chorus.
What's that you're carrying, Ron? Oh, it's a Golden.
And before me, dizzying tides of yellow swirled and melted.
Put him down. Put him down quick and let's see what's wrong.
Hundreds of eyes, spotlights, glittering lenses. I lowered him to the mattress in the corner. Oh. And the Golden lay on orange silk pillows in a teak barge drawn by swans, accompanied by flutes and drums.
Where did you find him?
Circling against the ivory moon on her broom. We watched the glowing barge, hundreds of feet below, sliding down the silvered waters between the crags.
We just picked him up off the street. Vine thought he was drunk, but he don't smell.
Was he laughing?
Laughter rolled and broke open on the rocks.
Yeah, just before he collapsed.
Then he must be from the Undock expedition that just got back.
Mosquitoes darted at us through the wet fronds. The insects reeled among the leaves, upsetting the droplets that fell like glass as barely visible beyond the palms, the barge drifted on the bright, sweltering river. That's right. I backpaddled frantically to avoid a hippopotamus that threatened to upset my kayak. I'd forgotten they'd just come in.
Okay, I'm out of it. Let me in. Where did they come back from?
Ratlet's breath clouded in front of his lips. The snow hissed beneath the runners as we looked after the barge, nearly at the white horizon.
Undock, of course.
The barking grew fainter.
Where did you think?
White eclipsed to black, and the barge was a spot gleaming in the distance of galactic night, flown on by laboring comets. Undock is the furthest galaxy reached yet. They just got back last week.
Sick.
I dug my fingers against my abdomen, trying to grab the pain.
They all came back sick.
Fever-heated blood bubbles in my eyes, and I slipped to the ground, my mouth wide, my tongue like paper on my lips.
All right, Allegra, cut it out. You don't have to be so dramatic.
Oh, I'm sorry, Ratty. Vine.
Cool. Water. Nausea swept away as solicitous nurses hastily put the pieces back together until everything was beautiful. Or so austerely horrible it could be appreciated as beauty.
Anyway, they came back with some sort of disease they picked up out there. Apparently it's not contagious, but they're stuck with it for the rest of their lives. Every few days they suddenly have a blackout. It's preceded by a fit of hysterics. It's just one of those stupid things they can't do anything about yet. Doesn't hurt their being Golden.
How long have they passed out for?
Only a few hours. Must be terribly annoying.
And I began to feel mildly itchy in all sorts of unscratchable places. My shoulder blades, somewhere down my ear, the roof of my mouth. Have you ever tried to scratch the roof of your mouth?
Well, let's sit down and wait it out.
We can talk. That way it won't seem like such a long...
And hundreds of years later, she finished.
Time.
Good. I wanted to talk to you. That's why I came up here in the first place.
Oh, fine. I love to talk. I want to talk about love. Loving someone.
An incredible yearning twisted my stomach, rose to block my throat.
I mean really loving someone.
The yearning brushed the edge of agony.
Means you are willing to admit the person you love is not what you first fell in love with, not the image you first had. And you must be able to like them still, for being as close to that image as they are, and avoid disliking them for being so far away.
And through the tenderness that suddenly obliterated all hurt, Ratlet's voice came from the jeweled mosaic of overlapping masks that shielded him.
Allegra, I want to talk about loneliness.
I'm on my way home, kids. Tell me what happens to Prince Charming when he wakes up.
They kept on talking while I went through the difficulties of finding my way out without Allegra's help. When my head cleared halfway down the stairs, I couldn't tell you if I'd been there 5 minutes or 5 years. When I got to the hangar the next morning, Sandy was filing the 8-foot prongs on the conveyor up on the scaffold.
You got a job coming in about 20 minutes.
I hope it's not another of those rebuilt jobs.
Yeah.
Hell, I don't want to see another one for 6 weeks.
All he wants is a general tune-up, maybe 2 hours.
Depends on where it's been. Where has it been?
Just back from...
Never mind. I think I'll put the books in order for the last 6 months. Can't let it go forever.
Boss, that'll take all day.
Then I better get started.
I leaned back out the door.
Don't disturb me.
Of course, as soon as the shadow of the hull fell over the office window, I came out in my coveralls, after giving Sandy 5 minutes to get it grappled and himself worried. I took the lift up to the 150 catwalk. When I stepped out, Sandy threw me a grateful smile from his scar-ugly face. The Golden had already started his instructions. When I reached them and coughed, the Golden turned to me and continued talking, not bothering to fill me in on what he'd said before, figuring Sandy and I would put it together. You could tell this Golden had made his pile. He wore an immaculate blue tunic with bronze codpiece, bracelets, and earrings. His hair was the same bronze. His skin was burned red-black, and his blue-gray eyes and tight-muscled mouth were proud, proud, proud. When I finished getting instructions, Sandy quietly got started unwelding the 8-foot seal of the organum so we could get to the checkout circuits. Finally, the Golden stopped talking. That's the only way you could tell he was finished, and leaned his angular 6.5 feet against the railing, clicking his glossy nails against the pipe. I climbed out on the rigging to help Sandy. We had been at work 10 minutes when a kid, maybe 18 or 19, barefoot and brown, black hair hacked off at shoulder length, a rag that didn't fit tucked around under his belt and dirty, came wandering down the catwalk. His thumbs were hooked under the yellow belt. Golden. First I thought he'd come from the ship. Then I realized he'd just stalked into the hangar from outside and come up on the lift.
Hey, brother!
The kid who was a Golden hooked his thumbs in the belt as Sandy and I watched from the rigging on the side of the hull.
Hey, I'm getting tired of hanging around this starpit. It just about broke as well. Where are you running to?
The man who was Golden clicked his nails again.
Go away, distant cousin.
Oh, come on, brother. Give me a berth on your lifeboat out of this dung heap to someplace worthwhile.
Go away, or I'll kill you.
Well, now, brother, I'm just a youngster adrift in this forsaken quarter of the sky. Come on, now.
Suddenly, the blonde man whirled from the railing, grabbed up a 4-foot length of pipe leaning beside him, and swung it so hard it hissed. The black-haired ragamuffin leapt back, and from under his rag snatched something black that, with a flick of that long nail, grew 7 inches of blade. The bar swung again, caught the shoulder of the boy, then clattered against the hull. He shrieked and came straight forward. The two bodies locked, turned, fell, a gurgle, and the man's hand slipped from the neck of the ragamuffin. The boy scrambled back to his feet. Blood bubbled and popped on the hot blade. A last spasm caught the man, and he flipped over, smearing the enameled catwalk, rolled once more, and this time under the rail, and dropped 250 feet to the cement flooring. Flick. Off went the power and the knife. The Golden wiped powdered blood on his thigh and spat over the rail.
No relative of mine.
Flick. The blade itself disappeared. He started down the catwalk.
Hey! What about, I mean you? Where your ship?
There are no inheritance laws among Golden, only rights of plunder. The Golden glanced back and sneered.
I give it to you!
His shoulder must have been killing him, but he stepped into that lift like he was walking into a telephone booth. That's a Golden for you. Sandy was horrified and bewildered. Behind his pitted ugliness, there was that particularly wretched amazement only the totally vulnerable get when hurt. I felt sorry for him. That's the first time you've ever seen an incident like that.
Well, I wandered into Gerg's bar a couple hours after they had that massacre, but the ones who started it were drunk.
Drunk or sober, believe me, it doesn't make that much difference to the way a man acts, I know. I keep forgetting you've only been here 3 months. Sandy, upset, looked down at the twisted blot on the flooring.
What about him? And the ship, boss?
I'll call a wagon to come scrape him up. The ship's yours.
Huh?
He gave it to you. It'll stand up in court. It just takes one witness, me.
What am I going to do with it? I mean, I would have to haul it to a junk station to get the salvage. Look, boss, I'm going to give it to you. Sell it or something. I'd feel a sort of funny with it anyway.
I don't want it. Besides, then I'd be involved in the transaction, and I couldn't be a witness.
I'll be a witness.
Ratbutt stepped from the lift.
I caught the whole bit when I came in the door. Great acoustics in this place. Ceiling is, 120 feet overhead, more or less. How's that, huh?
127.
I need more practice. Hey, come on, Sandy. You give it to him, and I'll be a witness.
You're a minor.
Sandy didn't like Ratlett. I used to think it was because Ratlett was violent and flamboyant, where Sandy was stolid and ugly. Even though Sandy kept protesting the temporariness of his job to me, I remember when I first got to the Star Pit, those long, dying thoughts I'd had about leaving. It was a little too easy to see Sandy, a mechanic here, 30 years from now. I wasn't the only one it had happened to. Ratlett had been a grease monkey here 3 weeks. You tell me where he was going to be in three more.
Aren't you supposed to be greasing at Pulaski's?
Coffee break. If you're going to give it away, Sandy, can I have it?
So you can claim salvage? Hell no.
Well, I don't want it for salvage. I want it for a present. Yeah, to give to someone else. Well, finish the tune-up and give it to me, okay?
You're nuts, kid boy. Even if I gave you the ship, what are you going to pay for the work?
Oh, it'll only take a couple of hours. You're half done anyway. I figured you'd throw in the tune-up along with it. Look, if you really want the money, I'll give it to you a little at a time. Hey, Vine, what sort of professional discount will you give me? I'm just a grease monkey, but I'm still in the business.
I whacked the back of his red head between a little too playfully and not too hard. Come on, kid boy. Help me take care of Puddles downstairs. Sandy, finish it up, huh?
Yeah.
Sandy grunted and plunged both hands back in the organum. As soon as the lift door closed, Ratlett demanded,
You gonna give it to me, Vine?
It's Sandy's ship.
Well, you tell him and he will.
You tell me how the Golden turned out when he came to. I assume that's who you want the ship for? What sort of a fellow was he? Ratlett hooked his fingers in the mesh wall of the lift cage and leaned back.
There are only two types of Golden, mean ones and stupid ones.
He was repeating a standard line you heard around the Star Pit. I hope yours is stupid. I was thinking of the two who just ruined Sandy's day and upset mine.
Which is worse?
That's the rest of the line. When a Golden isn't being outright mean, he exhibits the sort of non-thinkingness that gets other people hurt. You remember the one that nearly rammed my ship? Or the ones who didn't bother to bring back the Kyber antitoxin? It can be a lot worse than meanness.
But this one is unbelievably stupid.
Yesterday you hated them. Today you want to give one a ship?
Well, he doesn't have one. And because he's sick, it'll be hard for him to find work unless he has one of his own.
I see. We bounced on the silicon cushion. I pushed open the door and started for the office. What all went on after I left? I must have missed the best part of the evening.
You did. Well, I really need that much more sleep when I pass 35.
Cut the cracks and tell me what happened.
Well,
Ratlett leaned against the office door jamb while I dialed necrotics.
Allegra and I talked a little while after you left, till finally we realized the Golden was awake and listening. Then he told us we were beautiful.
I raised an eyebrow.
That's what we said. And he said it again, that watching us talk and think and build was one of the most beautiful things he'd ever seen. What have you seen? We asked him. And he began to tell us. Oh, Vime, the places he's been, the things he's done, the landscapes he's starved in, and the hells where he's had to lie down and go to sleep. He was that tired. Or the heavens he's soared through screaming. Well, the things he told us about. And Allegra made them almost real so we could all be there again, just like she used to do when she was a psychiatrist. The stories and the places and the things.
Sounds like it was really something.
It was nothing. It was all in the tears that wash your eyes and the humming in your ears and the taste of your own saliva. It was just a hallucination, Vime. It wasn't real. But that thing I told you about, huge, alive and dead at the same time, like a star, way in another galaxy, well, he's seen it. And last night, it wasn't real, of course, but I almost heard it, singing.
His eyes were huge and green and bright. I felt envious of anyone who could pull this reaction from kids like Allegra and Ratlett.
So we decided after he went back to sleep and we lay awake talking a while longer that we'd try and help him get back out there. Because it's wonderful.
That's fascinating. When I finished my call, I stood up from the desk. I'd been sitting on the corner. After work, I'll buy you dinner and you can tell me about the things he showed you.
He's still there at Allegra's. I'm going right back after work.
Oh, I didn't seem to be invited.
It's just a shame that he's so stupid.
He glanced at the mess that had been a Golden staining the concrete and shook his head. I'd gone back to the books when Sandy stepped in.
All finished. What say we not go for a beer or something, huh, boss?
All right. I was surprised. Sandy was usually as social as he was handsome. Want to talk about something?
Yeah.
That business this morning got to your head, huh?
Yeah.
There is a reason. Come on, let's go. It's got something to do with the psychological part of being a golden. Meanness and stupidity, like everybody says. But however it makes them act here, it protects them from complete insanity at the 20,000 light-year limit.
Yeah, I know. But that's not what I wanted to talk about.
It isn't?
Uh-uh.
Well?
It's that kid. The one you're going to give the ship to.
Ratlet?
Yeah.
And I haven't made up my mind about giving him the ship. Besides, legally, it's yours.
You'll give it to him. And I don't care. I mean, not about the ship. But, boss, I gotta talk to you about that kid boy.
Something about Sandy. I'd never realized he'd thought of Ratlet as more than a general nuisance. Also, he seemed sincerely worried about me. I was curious. It took him all the way to the bar and through two beers, while I drank hot milk and honey, before he tongued and chewed what he wanted to say into shape.
Boss, understand. I'm nearer Ratlet than you. Not only my age. My life's been more like his than yours has. You look at him like a son. To me, he's a younger brother. I taught him all the tricks. I don't understand him completely, but I see him clearer than you do. He's had a hard time, but not as hard as you think. He's going to take you, and I don't mean money, for everything he can.
Where the hell that came from, I didn't know, and I didn't like. He won't take me for anything I don't want to give.
Boss, you got kids of your own?
9. Did have. I don't see the ones who are left now, for which their parents have always been just as happy. Except one, and she was sensible enough to go along with the rest while she was alive.
Oh.
Sandy got quiet again. Suddenly he went scrambling in his overall pouch and pulled out a 3-inch portapix. Those great, greasy hands I was teaching to pick up an eggshell through a 500-to-1 ratio Waldo were clumsily fumbling at the push-pull levers.
I got kids. See? 7 of them.
And on the portapix screen was a milling, giggling group of little apes that couldn't have been anybody else's. All the younger one laughed was Acne. They began to wave, and the speaker in the back chirped.
Hi, Doc. Hello, Doc. Doc, Mommy says to say we love you. Doc, come home soon.
I'm not with them now. But I'm going back as soon as I get enough money so I can take them all out of that hellhole they're in now and get a whole family with a decent-sized pro group. There are only 23 adults there now, and things were beginning to rub. That's why I left in the first place. It was getting so nobody could talk to anybody else. That's pretty rough on all our kids. 32 when I left. But soon I'll be able to fix that.
On the salary I'm paying you? This was the first I'd heard of any of this. That was my first reaction. My second, which I didn't voice, was, then why the hell don't you take that ship and sell it somehow? Over 40 and self-employed, the most romantic become monetarily practical. Sandy's fist came down hard on the bar.
That's what I'm trying to say to you, boss. About you, about Ratlet. You've all got it in your heads that this out here is it. Finito. The end. Sure, you got to accept limitations, but the right ones. Sure, you have to admit there are certain directions which you cannot go. But once you do that, you find there are others where you can go as far as you want. Look, I'm not going to hang around the star pit all my life. And if I can make my way back towards Galactic Center, make enough money so I can get home, raise my family the way I want, that's going forward. Forward even from here, not back.
All right. Quiet Sandy had surprised me. I still wondered why he wasn't breaking his tail to get salvage on that ship that had just fallen into his hands, if getting back home with money in his pocket was that important. I'm glad you told me about yourself. Now, how does all this tie up with Ratlet?
Yeah, Ratlet.
He put the portapix back in his overall pouch.
Boss, Ratlet is the kid your own could be. You want to give him the advice, friendship, and concern he's never had, that you couldn't give yours. But Ratlet is also the kid I was about 10 years ago. Started no place, with no destination, and no values to help figure out the way. Mixed up in all the wrong things, mainly because he's not sure where the right ones are.
I don't think you're that much like Ratlet. I think you may wish you were. You've done a lot of things Ratlet's done. Ever write a novel?
I tried to write a trilogy. It was lousy. But it pushed some things off my chest, so I got something out of it even if nobody else did, which is what's important. Because now I'm a better mechanic for it, boss. Until I admit to myself what I can't do, it's pretty hard to work on what I can. Same goes for Ratlet. You too. That's growing up. And one thing you can't do is help Ratlet by giving him a ship he can't fly.
Growing up brought back the picture. Sandy, did you ever build an ecologerium when you were a kid?
No.
The word had the puzzled inflection that means don't even know what one is. I didn't either. Then I grinned and punched him in the shoulder. Maybe you're a little like me, too. Let's get back to work.
Another thing.
Sandy didn't look very happy as he got off the stool.
Boss, that kid's gonna hurt you. I don't know how, but it's gonna seem like he hunted for how to make it hurt most, too. That's what I wanted to tell you, boss.
I was going to urge him to take the ship, but he handed me the keys back in the hangar before I could say anything and walked away. When people who should be clearing up their own problems start giving you advice, well, there was something about Sandy I didn't like. If I can't take long walks at night with company, I take them by myself. I was strolling by the edge. The whirlwind was low, and the stellar plex, that huge heat-gathering mirror that's hung 9,000 miles off the pit, was out. It looks vaguely like the moon used to look from Earth, only twice as big, perfectly silver, and during the 3.5 days it faces us, it's always full. Then, up ahead where the fence was broken, I saw Racket kicking gravel over the edge. He was leaning against a lamppost, his shirt ballooning and collapsing at his back. Hey, kid boy, isn't the Golden still at Allegra's? What's the matter? Ain't dinner yet? He shrugged. His body had that sort of ravenous metabolism that shows 24 hours without food. Come on, I promised you a meal. Why so glum?
Make it something to drink.
Now, I know about your phony ID, but we're going to eat. You can have milk just like me. No protests, no dissertation on the injustice of liquor laws. He started walking with me. Come on, kid boy, talk to Gramps. Don't you want your ship anymore? Suddenly he clutched my forearm with bony fingers. My forearm is pretty thick, and he couldn't get his hand around it.
Vine, you've got to make Sandy give it to me now. You've got to.
Kid boy, talk to me.
Allegra. And the Golden. Hate Golden, Vine. Always hate them. Because if you start to like one and then start hating again, it's worse.
What's going on? What are they doing?
He's talking and she's hallucinating. And neither one pays any attention to me.
I see.
You don't see. You don't understand about Allegra and me.
I was the only one who'd met the both of them who didn't. I know you're very fond of each other. More could be said. Ratnett said more.
We don't even like each other that much, Vine. But we need each other. Since she's been here, I get her medicine for her. She's too sick to go out much now. And when I have bad changes or sometimes bright recognitions, it doesn't matter. I bring them to her and she builds pictures of them for me. And we explore them together. And learn about things. When she was a psychiatrist for the government, she learned an awful lot about how people tick. And she's got an awful lot to teach me, things I've got to know.
15-year-old, ex-psychiatrist, drug addict, same sort of precocity that produces 13-year-old novelists. Get used to it.
I need her now almost as much as she needs her medicine.
Have you told the Golden you've got him a ship?
You didn't say I could have it yet.
Well, I say so right now. Why don't we go back there and tell him he can be on his way? If we put it to him a little more politely, don't you think that'll do the trick? He didn't say anything. His face just got back a lot of its life. We'll go right after we eat. What the hell, I'll buy you a drink. I may even have one with you. Allegra's was blinding when we arrived.
Raclette, you're back. Hello, Vine. I'm so glad you're both here. Everything is beautiful tonight.
The Golden. Where's the Golden?
He's not here.
A momentary throb of sadness dispelled with treacherous joy.
But he's coming back.
Oh. His voice echoed through the long corridors of golden absence lining the room.
Because I got a ship for him. All his. Just had a tune-up. He can leave anytime he wants to.
Here are the keys. I took them from my pouch for dramatic effect. Happened to have them right here. As I handed them to Raffet, there were fireworks, applause, a fanfare of brasses.
Oh, that's wonderful. Wonderful. Because guess what, Rattlers? Guess what, Vine?
I don't know. What?
I'm a Golden, too.
From the shoulders of the cheering crowd, pushing their way through still more admiring thousands.
Huh?
I, me, myself, am actually an honest-to-goodness Golden. I just found out today.
You can't be. You're too old for it just to show up now.
Something about my medicine. It's dreadfully complicated.
The walls were papered with anatomical charts, music by Stockhausen.
Something in my medicine kept it from coming out until now, until a Golden could come to me, drawing it up and out of the depths of me, till it burst out,
beautiful and wonderful and golden. Right now, he's gone off to Carlson Labs with a urine sample for a final hormone check. They'll tell him in an hour, and he'll bring back my golden belt. But he's sure already. And when he comes back with it, I'm going to go with him to the galaxies as his apprentice. We're going to find a cure for his sickness and something that will make it so that I won't need my medicine anymore. He says if you have all the universe to roam around in, you can find anything you look for. But you need it all, not just a cramped little cluster of a few billion stars off in a corner by itself. Oh, I'm free, Ratlet, like you always wanted to be. While you were gone, he did something to me that was golden, and it triggered my hormonal imbalance.
The image came in through all five senses. Breaking the melodious ecstasy came the clatter of keys as Ratlet hurled them at the wall. I left, feeling pretty odd. Ratlet had started to go too, but Allegra called him back.
Oh, no, don't go on like that, Ratty. Act your age. Won't you stay and do me one little last favor?
So, he stayed. When I untangled myself from the place and was walking home, I kept on remembering what Allegra had said about love. Work next day went surprisingly smoothly. Polochki called me up about 10 and asked if I knew where Ratlet was because he hadn't been at work that day.
You're sure the kid isn't sick?
I said I'd seen him last night and that he was probably all right. Polochki made a sort of disgusted sound and hung up. Sandy left a few minutes early, like he'd been doing all week, to run over to the post office before it closed. He was expecting a letter from his group, he said. I felt strange about having given the ship away from out under him. It was sort of an immature thing to do. But he hadn't said anything about wanting it, and Ratlet was still doing Allegra favors, so maybe it would all work out for the best. I thought about visiting Allegra that evening, but there was the last 6 months' paperwork, still not finished. I went into the office, plugged in the computer, and got ready to work late. I was still at it sometime after 11 when the entrance light blinked, which meant somebody had come into the hangar door. I'd locked it. Sandy had the key so he could come in early. So it was Sandy. I was ready for a break and all set to jaw with him a while. He was always coming back to do little work at odd hours. I waited for him to come into the office. But he didn't. Then a needle on the power gauge, which had been hovering near zero with only the drain of the little office computer, swung up to 7. One of the big pieces of equipment had been cut in. There was some cleanup work to do, but nothing for a piece that size. I switched off the computer and stepped out of the office. The first great opening in the hangar roof was mostly blocked with the bulk of Ratlet's, Sandy's, my ship. Stellarplex light curved smoothly over one side, then snarled in the fine webbing of lifts, catwalks, haul lines, and grappler riggings. The other two were empty, and 100-meter circles of silver dropped through the assembly rigging to the concrete floor. Then, I saw Sandy. He stood just inside the light from the last opening, staring up at the stellarplex, its glare lost in his ruined face. As he raised his left hand, when it started to move, I thought it looked too big. Light caught on the silver joints of the master gauntlet he was wearing. I knew where the power was going. As his hand went above his head, a shadow fell over him as a 15-foot slave talon swung from the darkness, its movements aping the master glove. He dropped his hand in front of his face, fingers curved. Metal claws lowered about him, beginning to quiver. Something about the way... He was trying to kill himself! I started running toward those hesitant, gaping claws, leaped into the grip, and reached over his shoulder to slap my forearm into the control glove, just as he squeezed. Like I say, my forearm is big, but when those claws came together, it was a tight fit. Sandy was crying. You stupid, inconsiderate, bird-brained, infantile! As I pried his fingers loose from my arm, the talons jerked open one at a time from around us. Asinine! Idiotic! At last I got the glove off. Puerile! What the hell is the matter with you? Sandy was sitting on the floor now. His head hung between his shoulders. He stank. I maneuvered the slave talon back into place with the gross motion controls on the gauntlet's wrist. Look, if you want to go jump off the edge, that's fine with me. Half the gate's down anyway. But don't come here and mess up my tools. You can squeeze your own head up a little bit, but you're not going to bust my glove up here. You're fired. Now, tell me what's wrong.
I knew it wasn't going to work. Wasn't even worth trying. I knew.
Beside his left hand was the portapix, its screen cracked, and a crumpled piece of paper. I turned off the glove, and the talon stopped humming 20 feet overhead. I picked up the paper and smoothed it out. I didn't mean to read it all the way through.
Dear Sanford, things have been difficult since you left, but not too hard. And I guess a lot of pressure is off everybody since you went away. The kids are getting used to your not being here, though Bobby D. cried a lot at first. She doesn't now. We got your letter, and we're glad to hear things have begun to settle down for you, though Hank said you should have written before this and was very mad, though Mary tried to calm him down. But he just said, when he married you all, he married me too, damn it, and I've got just as much right to be angry at him as you have. Which is true, Sanford. But I tell you what he said because it's a quote, and I think you should know exactly what's being said, especially since it expresses something we all feel on one level or another. You said you might be able to send us a little money if we wanted you home, which I think would be very good. The money, I mean. The Laura said if I put that in the letter, she would divorce us, but she won't. And like Hank, I've got a right to say what I feel, which is, yes, I think you should send money, especially after that unpleasant business just before you left. But we are all agreed we do not want you to come back, and we'd rather not have the money if that's what it meant. That is hard but true. As you can gather, your letter caused quite an upset here. I would like, which makes me different from the others, but is why they wanted me to write this letter, to hear from you again and keep track of what you're doing, because I used to love you very much, and I never could hate you. But like Bobby D., I've stopped crying. Sincerely,
the letter was signed
Joseph.
In the lower corner were the names of the rest of the men and women of the group. Sandy?
I knew they wouldn't take me back. I didn't even really try, did I? But...
Sandy, get up.
But the children. What's going to happen to the children?
Then there was a sound from the other end of the hangar. 3 stories up the side of the ship in the open hatchway, silvered by stellarplex light, stood the Golden, the one Raffet and I had found on the street. You remember what he looked like. He and Allegra must have sneaked in while Sandy and I were struggling with the Waldo. Probably they wanted to get away as soon as possible before Ratlet made real trouble, or before I changed my mind and got the keys back. All this ship-giving had been done without witnesses. The sound was a lift rising toward the hatchway.
The children.
The door opened, and a figure stepped out in the white light. Only it was Ratlet. It was Ratlet's red hair, his gold earring, his bouncy run as he started for the hatch. And there were links of yellow metal around his waist. Baffled, I heard the Golden call...
Everything checks out inside, brother. She'll fly us anywhere.
I got the grapples all released, brother. Let's go.
Their voices echoed down through the hangar. Sandy raised his head, squinting. As Ratlet leaped into the hatch, the Golden caught his arm around the boy's shoulder. They stood a moment, gazing at one another. Then Ratlet turned to look down into the hangar, back on the world he was about to leave. I couldn't tell you if he knew we were there or not. Even as the hatch swung closed, the ship began to whistle. I hauled Sandy back into the shock chamber. I hadn't even locked the door when the thunder came and my ears nearly split. I think the noise surprised Sandy out of himself. It broke something up in my head, but the pieces were falling all wrong. Sandy, we've got to get going.
Huh?
He was fighting the drunkenness and probably his stomach, too.
I don't want to go nowhere.
You're going anyway. I'm sure as hell not going to leave you alone. When we were halfway up the stairs, I figured she wasn't there. I felt just the same. Maybe she was with them on the ship.
My medicine. Please, can't you get my medicine? I've got to have my medicine. Please. Please. Please.
I could just hear the small, high voice when I reached the door. I punched it open. Allegra lay on the mattress, pink eyes wide, white hair frizzled around her balding skull. She was incredibly scrawny, her uncut nails black as Sandy's nubs without the excuse of hours in a graphite-lubricated gauntlet. The translucency of her pigmentless skin under how many days of dirt made my flesh crawl. Her face drew in around her lips like the flesh about a scar.
My medicine. Fime, is that you? You'll get my medicine for me, Fime. Won't you get my medicine?
Her mouth wasn't moving. But the voice came on. She was too weak to project on any but the aural level. It was the first time I'd seen Allegra without her cloak of hallucination, and it brought me up short. Allegra? Ratlet and the Golden went off on the ship.
Ratlet. Oh, nasty, ratty, awful little boy. He wouldn't get my medicine. But you'll get it for me, won't you, Vine? I'm going to die in about 10 minutes, Vine. I don't want to die. Not like this. The world is so ugly and painful now. I don't want to die here.
Don't you have any? I stared around the room I hadn't seen since Drunk Roach lived there. Dried garbage piled first in one corner now covered half the floor. The rest was littered with papers, broken glass, a spill can of something unrecognizable for the mold, and a dead beetle.
No, none here. Ratlet gets it from a man who hangs out in Gerd's over on Chi AX. Oh, Ratlet used to get it for me every day. Such a nice little boy. Every day he would bring me my lovely medicine. I never had to leave my room at all. You go get it for me, Vine.
It's the middle of the night, Allegra. Gerg's is closed and Chi AX is all the way across the pit anyway. I couldn't even get there in 10 minutes, much less find this character and come back.
If I were well, Vine, I'd fly you there in a cloud of light, pulled by peacocks and porpoises, and you'd come back to oboes and tambourines, bringing my beautiful medicine to me in less than an eye's blink. I'm sick now. Sick. And I'm going to die.
There was a twitch in the crinkled lid of one pink eye. Allegra, what happened?
Ratlet's insane. Insane at 20,000 light years. Dead at 25.
But his golden belt.
It was mine. It was my belt. And he stole it. And he wouldn't get my medicine. Ratlet's not a golden. I'm a golden, Vime. I can go anywhere, anywhere at all. I'm a golden, golden, golden. But I'm sick now. I'm so sick.
But didn't the golden know the belt was yours?
Him? Oh, he's so incredibly stupid. He would believe anything. Golden went to check some papers and get provisions and was gone all day to get my belt. But you were here that night. I asked Ratlet to go and get my medicine and take another sample to Carlson's for me. But neither of them came back till I was very sick, very weak. Ratlet found the Golden, you see, told him that I changed my mind about going and that he, Ratlet, was a Golden as well and that he'd just been to Carlson's. So the Golden gave him my belt, and off they went.
But how in the world would he believe a kid with a story like that?
You know how stupid Golden can be, Vine. As stupid as they can be mean. Besides, it doesn't matter to him if Ratlet dies. He doesn't care if Ratlet was telling the truth or not. The Golden will live. When Ratlet starts drooling, throwing up blood, goes deaf, then blind, then dies, the Golden won't even be sad. He's too stupid to feel sad. That's the way Golden are. But I'm sad, Vine, because no one will bring me my medicine.
You mean you didn't know what you were doing to Ratlet by leaving Allegra? You mean you didn't know how much he wanted to get out and how much he needed you at the same time? You couldn't see what it would do to him if you deprived him of the thing he needed and rubbed his nose in the thing he hated both at once? You couldn't guess that he'd pull some crazy stunt? Oh, kid girl, you talk about Golden. You're the stupid one.
Not stupid. Mean, Vine. I knew he'd try to do something. I just didn't think he'd succeed. Ratlet is really such a child.
Couldn't you have waited just a little longer, Allegra? Couldn't you have worked out the leaving some other way, not to hurt him so much?
I wanted to get out, Vime, to keep going and not be trapped. Like Ratlet wanted, like you want, like Sandy wants, like Golden. Only I was cruel. I had the chance to do it, and I took it. Why is that bad, Vime? Unless, of course, that's what being free means.
A twitch in the eyelid again. It closed. The other stayed open. Allegra?
I'm a golden vine. A golden. And that's how golden are. But don't be mad at me, Vine. Don't. Rabbit was mean, too. Not to give me my medicine.
The other eye closed. I closed mine, too, and tried to cry, but my tongue was pushing too hard on the roof of my mouth. Sandy came to work the next day, and I didn't mention his being fired. The teletapes got hold of it, and the lead lines tried to make the thing as sordid as possible.
Ex-con, teenager, slays junkie sweetheart, dies horribly.
They didn't mention his novel. They didn't mention the Golden either. They never do. Reporters pried around the hangar a while, trying to get us to say the ship was stolen. Sandy came through pretty well.
It was his ship. I gave it to him.
What are you gonna give a kid like that a ship for? Maybe you loaned it to him, huh? Dies, horrible death, in borrowed ship. That sounds okay.
Gave it to him, as the boss.
He turned back toward the scaffolding.
He witnessed.
Look, even if you like the kid, you're not saving him anything by covering up.
I didn't like him, but I gave him the ship.
Thanks, I told Sandy when they left. Not sure what I was thanking him for, but still feeling very grateful. I'll do you a favor back. A week later, Sandy came in and said,
Boss, I want my favor.
So, you're going to quit at last. Can you finish out the week? He looked embarrassed, and his hand started moving around in his overall pouch.
Well, yeah, I am going to leave, but not right away, boss. It is getting a little hard for me to take out here.
You'll get used to it. You know, there's something about you that, well, it's a lot like me. I learned. You will, too.
I don't think I want to. See? I got a ticket.
In his dirty fingers was a metal-banded card.
In 4 weeks, I'm going back in from the star pit. Only I didn't want to tell you just now because, well, I did want this favor, boss.
You're not going back to your group. What are you going to do?
Get a job. I don't know. There are other groups. Maybe I've grown up a little bit.
His fist went way down into his pouch, and he started to shift his weight back and forth.
About that favor, boss.
What is it?
I got to talking to this kid outside. He's really had it rough, Vine.
That was the first and last time Sandy ever called me by my name, though I'd asked him to enough times before.
And he could use a job.
A laugh got all set to come out of me, but it didn't, because the look on his ugly face behind the belligerence was so vulnerable and intense. Vulnerable? But Sandy had his ticket. Sandy was going on. Send him to Polachki's. Probably needs an extra grease monkey. Now let me get back to work, huh?
Could you take him over there? That's the favor, boss.
Sandy, I'm awfully busy. Oh, all right.
Hey, boss, remember that thing you asked me if I ever had when I was a kid?
It took a moment to come back to me. You mean in a collegerium?
Yeah, that's the word. The kid boy's got one. He's right outside waiting for you.
He's got it with him? Sandy nodded. I walked toward the hangar door, picturing some kid lugging around a 6x6 plastic cage. Outside, the boy was sitting on a fuel hydrant. I'd put a few trees there, and the daylight from the illumination tubes arcing the street dappled the gravel around him. He was about 14, with copper skin and curly black hair. I saw why Sandy wanted me to go with him about the job. Around his waist, as he sat hunched over the hydrant with his toes spread on the metal base flange, was a wide-linked belt that was golden. He was looking through an odd jewel and brass thing that hung from a chain around his neck. Hey! There were spots of light on his blue-black hair. You need a job? My name's Vine. What's yours?
You call me Anne.
Your nickname? And really?
Androcles.
Oh. My oldest kid is dead. I know it because I have all sorts of official papers saying so. But sometimes it's hard to remember, and it doesn't matter whether the hair is black, white, or red. Well, let's see if we can put you to work somewhere. Come on. Anne stood up, eyes fixed on me, suspicion hiding behind high glitter. What's that thing around your neck? His eyes struck it and bounced back to my face.
Cousin?
Huh? Then I remembered the golden slang. Oh, sure. First cousins. Brothers if you want.
Brother.
Then a smile came tumbling out, silent and volcanic. He began loping along beside me as we started off toward Palachki's. He held up the thing on the chain.
This is an ecologerium. Want to see?
Oh, a little one. With microorganisms. Sure, let's have a look. The hair on the back of his neck pawed the chain as he bent to remove it. I held it up to see. Some blue liquid, a fairly large air bubble, and a glob of black speckled jelly in a transparent globe the size of an eyeball. It was set in two metal rings, one within the other, pivoted so the globe turned in all directions. Mounted on the outside ring was a curved tongue of metal, at the tip of which was a small tube with a pin-sized lens. The tube was threaded into a bushing, and I guess you used it to look at what was going on inside the sphere.
It's self-contained. The only thing needed to keep the whole thing going is light. Just about any frequency will do, except way up on the blue end, and the shell cuts that out.
I looked through the brass eyepiece. I'd swear there were over 100 life forms with 5 to 50 stages each. Spores, zygotes, seeds, eggs, growing and developing through larvae, pupae, buds, reproducing through sex, syzygy, fission, and the whole ecological cycle took about 2 minutes. All this was going on amidst a kaleidoscope of frail, wilting flowers and blooming jeweled webs, vines and worms, warts and jellyfish, symbiotes and saprophytes, while rainbow herds of algae careened back and forth like glittering confetti. One rough-rimed galoot felt that you'd see him without the eyepiece, squatted on the wall, feeding on jelly, batting his eyes while the tide surged through tears and gills. I blinked as I took it from my eye. That looks complicated. I handed it back to him.
Not really.
He slipped it around his neck.
It took me 2 weeks with a notebook to get the whole thing figured out. You saw the big fellow?
The one who winked?
Yes. Its reproductive cycle is about 2 hours, which trips you up at first. Everything else goes so fast. But once you see him mate with the thing that looks like a spider web with sequins, same creature, different sex, and watch the offspring aggregate into paramecia, then dissolve again, the whole thing falls into...
One creature. The whole thing is a single creature.
It has to be to stay self-contained.
The grin on his face whipped away like a shade snapped up on a window. A very serious look was underneath.
Even after I saw the big fellow mate, it took me a week to understand it was all one.
But if Goofus and the fishnet have paramecia, it seemed logical when I made the guess.
You've seen one before.
Not like that one, anyway. I once saw something similar, but it was much bigger, about 6 feet across. And seriousness was replaced by quivering horror. I mean, he really started to shake.
How could you ever... even see all the stuff inside, much less catalog it. You say this is complicated.
Hey, relax, relax. He did, like that. It was much simpler. I went on to describe the one our kids had made so many years ago, as best I remembered.
Oh, it wasn't microorganisms. Simple, yes, very simple.
When he looked up, another expression had scrambled his features. I took a moment to identify it as confusion.
I don't see the point at all.
There was surprising physical surety in the boy's movement. His nervousness was a cat's, not a human's. But it's one of the psychological qualities of Golden. Well, it showed the kids a picture of the way the cycles of life progress. Anne rattled his chain.
That is why they gave us these things. But everything in the one you had was so primitive. It wasn't a very good picture.
Don't knock it. When I was a kid, all I had was an ant colony. I got my infantile Weltanschauung watching a bunch of bugs running around between two plates of glass. I think I would have been better prepared by a couple of hungry rats on a treadmill, or maybe a torus-shaped fish tank, alternating sharks, the schools of piranhas, get them all chasing around after each other real fast.
Ecology wouldn't balance. You'd need snails to get rid of the waste, and then a lot of plants to reoxygenate the water, and some sort of herbivore to keep down the plants, because they'd tend to choke out everything else, since neither the sharks nor the piranhas would eat them.
Kids and their damn literal minds.
And if the herbivores had some way to keep the sharks off, then you might do it.
What's wrong with the first one I described?
The lizards, the segment worms, the plants, warts. All their cycles were completely circular. They were born, grew up, reproduced, maybe took care of the kids a while, then died. Their only function was reproduction. That's a pretty awful picture.
Something about this kid who was golden, younger than Allegra, older than Ratlet, I liked. Anne tapped his globe with his pinky nail.
There are stages in here that don't get started on their most important functions till after they've reproduced and grown up through a couple of more metamorphoses as well. Those little green worms are a sterile end stage of the blue feathery things. But then they put out free phosphates that the algae live on. Everything else just about lives on the algae. Except the thorn balls. They eat the worms when they die. And there are phagocytes in there that ingest the dust things when they get out of the bubble and start infecting the liquid. Each of us in the class got one of these. They made us figure them out. Then we had to prepare these recordings on whether the reproductive process was the primary function in life or an adjunctive one.
Something white frothed in the corners of his mouth.
I think grown-ups should just leave their kids the hell alone and go to do something else. Stop bothering us. That's what I said. That's what I told them.
He stopped. His tongue flicked the foam at the cusp of his lips. He seemed all right again. Sometimes, if you leave them alone and forget about them, you end up with monsters who aren't kids anymore. If you'd been left alone, you wouldn't have a chance to put your 2 cents in the first place, and you wouldn't have that thing around your neck. And he was really trying to follow what I was saying. A moment past his rage, his face was as open and receptive as a 2-year-old's. God, I want to stop thinking about Anthony.
That's not what I mean.
He wrapped his arms around his shoulders and bit on his forearm pensively. Anne, you're not stupid, kid boy. You're cocky, but I don't think you're mean. You're golden. There was all my resentment. Out now, Ratlet. There it is, Allegra. I didn't grow up with the word, so it meant something different to me. Anne looked up to ingest my meaning. The tooth marks were white on his skin, then red around that. How long have you been one? He watched me, arms still folded.
They found out when I was 7.
That long ago?
Yes.
He turned and started walking again.
I was very precocious.
Oh. Just about half your life, then. How's it been, little brother, being a golden? Anne dropped his arms.
They take you away from your group a lot of the time. Special classes, training programs. I'm psychotic.
I never would have guessed. And what would you call Raffet or Allegra?
I know it shows, but it gets us through the psychic pressures at the reality breakdown at 20,000 light years. It does. For the past few years, though, they've been planning the psychosis artificially, pretty far down in the preconscious, so that it doesn't affect our ordinary behavior as much as it does the older ones. They can use this process on anyone whose hormone system is even close to golden. They can get a lot more and a lot better quality golden that way than just waiting for us to pop up by accident.
Hey, just what do you need a job out here for, though? Why not hitch out with some cousin or get a job on one of the intergalactics as an apprentice?
I have a job in another galaxy. There'll be a ship stopping for me in 2 months to take me out. A whole lot of starpits have been established in galaxies halfway up to Undock. I'll be going back and forth, managing roboy equipment, doing managerial work. I thought it would be a good idea to get some practical experience out here before I left.
Precocious. Look, even with roboy equipment, you have to know one hell of a lot about the insides of how many different kinds of Keeler drives. You're not going to get that kind of experience in 2 months as a grease monkey. And roboy equipment, I don't even have any in my place. Palachki's got some, but I don't think you'll get your hands on it.
I know a good deal already.
Yeah? I asked him a not too difficult question and got an adequate answer. Made me feel better he didn't come back with something really brilliant. I did know more than he did. Where'd you learn?
They gave me the information the same way they implanted my psychosis.
You're pretty good for your age. Dear old lunivocational. Maybe educational methods have improved a bit. Come to think of it, I was just as old as you when I started playing around with those Keeler models. Dozens and dozens of helical inserts.
And those oily organum sensitives and all that graphite. Yes, brother. But I've never even had my hands on a Waldo.
Hell, when I was younger than you, I could... Of course, with roboy equipment, you don't need them. But it's not a bad thing to know how they work, just in case.
That's why I want a job.
He hooked one finger on his chain.
Brother-in-law Sandy and I got to talking, so I asked him about working here. He said you might help me get in someplace.
I'm glad he did. My place only handles big ships, and it's all Waldo. Me and an assistant can do the whole thing. Palachki's place is smaller, but handles both inter- and intergalactic jobs, so you got more variety and a bigger crew. You find Palachki, say I sent you. Tell what you can do, and while you're out here, Felder, no, you'll probably get something better than a monkey.
Thanks, brother.
He turned off Kaye D. Palachki's hangar was ahead. Dull thunder sounded over the roof as a ship departed. As soon as I despair of the younger generation, one of you kids comes by and I start to think there's hope again. Granted, you're a psychopath. You're a lot better than some of your older, distant relations. Anne looked up at me, apprehensive. You've never had a run-in with some of your cousins out here, but don't be surprised if you're dead tomorrow and your job's been inherited by some character who's decided to split your head open to check on what's inside. I try to get used to you behaving like something that isn't even savage, but kid boy, can your kind really mess up a guy's picture of the world?
And what the hell do you expect us to act like? What would you do if you were trapped like us?
Huh? You trapped?
Look, the psychotechnician who made sure I was properly psychotic wasn't a golden brother. You pay us to bring back the weapons, Dad.
We don't fight your damn wars, Grandpa. You're the ones who take us away from our group, say we're too valuable to submit to your laws, then deny us our heredity because we don't breed true, no relative of mine.
Now, wait a minute. Anne snatched the chain from around his neck and held it taut in front of him. His voice ground to a whisper, his eyes glittered.
I strangled one of my classmates with this chain, the one I've got in my hands now.
One by one, his features blanked all expression.
The teacher took it away from me for a week as punishment for killing a little girl. Out here, no one will punish me, and my reflexes are faster than yours.
Fear lashed my anger as I followed the insanity flickering in his eyes.
Now.
He made a quick motion with his hands. I ducked.
I give it to you.
He flung the chain toward me. Reflexively, I caught it. Anne turned away instantly and stalked into Polotsky's. When I burst through the rattling hangar door at my place, the lift was coming down. Sandy yelled through the mesh walls.
Did he get the job?
Probably. I heard the cage settle on the silicon cushion. Sandy was at my side a moment later, grinning.
How do you like my brother-in-law, Androcles?
Brother-in-law? I remembered Anne using the phrase, but I thought it was part of the slang, which was golden. Something about the way Sandy said it, though. He's your real brother-in-law?
He's Joey's kid brother. I didn't want to say anything until after you met him.
Sandy came along with me toward the office.
Joey wrote me again and said since Anne was coming out here, he'd tell him to stop by and see me, and maybe I could help him out.
Now, how the hell am I supposed to know who Joey is? I pushed open the door. It banged the wall.
He's one of my husbands. The one who wrote me that letter you told me you'd read.
Oh, yeah, him. I started stacking papers.
I thought it was pretty nice of him, after all that, to tell Anne to look me up when he got out here. It means there's still somebody left who doesn't think I'm a complete waste. So what do you think of Androcles?
He's quite a boy. I scooped up the mail that had come in after lunch and started to go through it, but put it down to hunt for my coveralls.
Anne used to come visit us when he got his one weekend a month off from the training program as Golden. Joey's and Anne's parents lived up in the reeds near the estuary, but we lived back up the canyon by Cromer Falls. Anne and Joey were pretty close, even though Joey's my age and Anne was only 8 or 9 back then. I guess Joey was the only one who really knew what Anne was going through, since they were both Golden.
Surprised and shocked, I turned back to the desk. You were married with a Golden? One of the letters on top of the pile was addressed to Allegra, from Carlson's Labs. I had a carton of the kids' junk in the locker and had gotten the mail, there wasn't much, sent to the hangar, as though I was waiting for somebody to come for it.
Yeah, Joey.
So I wouldn't stand there gaping, I picked up Allegra's letter.
Since the traits of Golden are polychromozoic, they die out if they only breed with each other. There's a big campaign back in Galactic Center to encourage them to join heterogeneous pro-groups.
Like Blue Point Siamese cats, huh? I ran my blackened thumbnail through the seal.
Yeah, that's right, but they're not animals, boss. I remember what they put that kid boy through for psychotic reinforcement of the factors that were Golden to make sure they stuck. It tore me up to hear him talk about it when he'd visit us.
I pulled a portapix out of Allegra's envelope. Carlson tries to personalize its messages.
I'm sure glad they can erase the conscious memory from the kids' minds when they have to do that sort of stuff.
Small blessings and all that. I flipped the portapix on. Personalized but mass-produced.
Blessed addition.
The little speaker echoed me. Polotsky and I had used Carlson's a couple of times, I know. I guess every other mechanic up here had, too. The portapix had started in the middle. Now it hummed back to the beginning.
You know, Joey was different. Yeah, sort of dense about something.
Allegra, we were so glad to receive the urine sample you sent us by Mr. Ratlett last Thursday.
Even so, Joey was one of the sweetest men or women I've ever known. He was the easiest person in the group to live with. Maybe it was because he was
and
a whale.
And now, just a week later, remember, Carlson's gives results immediately and confirms them by personalized portapix in 7 days. We are happy to tell you that there will be a blessed addition to your group. However...
All right, he was different. Reacted funny to a lot of things. But nothing like this rank, destructive stupidity you find out here at the Starpit.
The fraternity is not Mr. Ratlett's. If you are interested for your eugenic records, in further information, please send us other possible urine samples from the men in your group, and we will be
I
glad to confirm
I can't understand the way people
paternity.
Act out here, boss, and that's
Thank
why I'm pushing
so
on.
Thank you so much for letting us give you this wonderful news. Remember, when in doubt, call Carlson.
You were married with... You loved a Golden?
Allegra.
Unbidden, the portafix began again.
We were so glad to receive the urine.
Sandy, you were hired because you were a fair mechanic and you kept off my back. Do what you're paid for. Get out of here.
Oh, sure, boss.
He backed quickly from the office. I sat down. Maybe I'm old-fashioned, but when someone runs off and abandons a sick girl like that, it gets me. That was the trip to Carlson's, the one last little favor Ratlett never came back from. On-the-spot results, and formal confirmation in 7 days. In her physical condition, pregnancy would have been as fatal as withdrawal, and she was too ill for any abortive method I know of not to kill her. On-the-spot results. Ratlett must have known all that, too, when he got the results back, the results that Allegra was probably afraid of. The results she sent him to find. Ratlett knew Allegra was going to die anyway, and so he stole a golden belt.
Loving someone. I mean, really loving someone.
When someone runs off and leaves a sick girl like that, there's got to be a reason. It came together for me like two fissionables. The explosion cut some moorings in my head I thought were pretty solidly fixed. I pulled out the books, plugged in the computer, unplugged it, put the books away, and stared at the ecologerium in my fist. Among the swimming, flying, crawling things, mating, giving birth, growing, changing, busy at whatever their business was, I picked out those dead-end green worms. I hadn't noticed them before because they were at the very edge of things, bumping against the wall, after they released their free phosphates and got tired of budding the shell. They turned on each other and tore themselves to pieces. Fear and anger is a bad combination in me. I came close to being killed by a golden once, through that meanness and stupidity. The same meanness and stupidity had killed Allegra and Ratlett, and now when this damn kid threatens to... I mean, at first I had thought he was threatening to. I reached Gerg's a few minutes after the daylights went out and the street lights came on, but I'd stopped in nearly a dozen places on the way. I remember trying to explain to a sailor from a star shuttle who was just stopping over at the star pit for the first time and was all upset because one woman golden had just attacked another with a broken glass... I remember saying to the three-headed bulge of his shoulder, an ant colony. You know what it is? Two pieces of glass with dirt between them, and you can see all the little ants make tunnels and hatch eggs and stuff. When I was a kid, I had an ant colony. I started to shake my hand in his face. The chain from the ecologerium was tangled up in my fingers.
Look!
He caught my wrist and put it down on the counter.
It's all right now, pal. Just relax.
You look! When I was a kid, all I had was an ant colony. He turned back and leaned his rusty elbow on the bar.
Okay.
Then he made the most stupid and frustrating mistake he possibly could have just then.
What about your aunt?
My mother.
I thought you were telling me about your aunt.
No. My aunt, she drank too much. This is about my mother.
All right, your mother then.
My mother. See, she was always worried about me getting sick and things... I got sick a lot when I was a kid. Ooh, she made me mad. Used to go down and watch the ships take off from a place they called the Brooklyn Navy Yards. They were ships that went to the stars. The sailor's oriental face grinned.
Aye, me too. Used to watch him when I was a kid.
But it was raining, and she wouldn't let me go out.
Ah, that's too bad. Little rain never hurt a kid. Why didn't she call up and have it turned off so you could go out? Too busy to pay attention to you, huh? One of my old men was like that.
Well, both of mine were, but not my ma. She was all over me all the time when she was there, but she made me mad.
Wouldn't turn off the rain.
Nah, couldn't. You didn't grow up where I did. Narrow-minded, dark-side world. No modern conveniences.
Off the main trading routes, huh?
Way off. She wouldn't let me go out, and that made me mad. So I broke it. My fist came down hard on the counter, and the plastic globe in its brass cage clacked on the wood. Broke it! Sand, glass, all over the rug, on the windowsill.
What did you
break? It. I stamped on it. I threw sand whenever she tried to make me stop.
Sand? You lived on a beach? We had a beach when I was a kid. A beach is nice for kids. What'd you break?
I let all the damn bugs out. Bugs and everything for days. I let them all out.
Didn't have no bugs on our beach. But you said you were off the main trading routes.
Let them out. Let
everybody out, whether they like it or not. It's their problem whether they make it, not mine. I don't care. I don't...
She let you go out and you didn't care?
My hand came down on top of the metal cage, hard. I caught my breath at the pain. I turned my palm up to look. There were red marks across it. On our beach? There weren't any bugs?
You mean you were just putting me on before about the bugs? Hey, are you all right?
I broke it. Then I smashed fist and globe and chain into the side of the counter. Let them out! I whirled away, clutching my bruised hand against my stomach.
Watch it, kid boy.
I'm not a kid boy. You think I'm some stupid, half-crazy kid.
So you're a few years
I'm not a kid anymore.
You're 10 years older than Sirius. Quiet down. They'll kick us out.
I pulled out of Gerg's. A couple of people came after me because I didn't watch where I was going. I don't know who won, but I remember somebody yelling, "Get out! Get out!" It may have been me. I remember later, staggering under the Mercury street lamp, the whirlwind slapping my face, stars swarming back and forth below me, gravel sliding under my boots, toes inches over the edge. The gravel clicked down the metal siding, the sound terribly clear as I reeled in the loud wind, shaking my arm against the nail. As I brought my hand back, the wind lashed the curled chain across my cheek and the bridge of my nose. I lurched back, trying to claw it away, but it stayed all tangled on my fingers while the globe swung, gleaming in the street light. The wind roared. Gravel chattered down the siding. Later, I remember the hangar door ajar, stumbling into the darkness so that in a moment I was held from plummeting into nothing only by my own footsteps as black swerved around me. I stopped when my hip hit a workbench. I poured around under the lip of the table till I found a switch. In the dim orange light, racked along the back of the bench in their plastic shock cases, were the row of master gauntlets. I slipped one out and slid my hand into it.
Who's over there?
Go away, Sandy. I turned from the bench, switched up the power on the wrist controls. Somewhere in the dark above, a 15-foot slave hand hummed to life.
Sorry, Buster, this isn't Sandy. Put that down and get away from there.
I squinted as the figure approached in the orange light, hand extended. I saw the vibragun and didn't bother to look at the face. Then the gun went down.
Vime, baby, that you? What the hell are you doing here this hour of the night?
Polotsky?
What'd you think it was?
Is this your... But I thought it was mine.
Hey, have you been a naughty kid boy tonight?
I swung my hand and the slave hand overhead careened 20 feet. The gun jumped.
Look, you mess up my Waldo and I will kill you. Don't care who you are. Take that thing off.
Very funny. I brought the talon down where I could see it, clawing shadow.
Come on, Vime, I'm serious. Turn it off and put it down. You're a mess now. You don't know what you're doing.
That kid, the Golden, did you give him a job?
Well, sure. He said you sent him. Smart so-and-so. He rehulled a little yacht with the Roboy Animacania catastasizer just to show me what he could do. If I knew a few more people who could handle them that well, I'd go all Roboy. Not worth a damn with a Waldo, but as long as he's got that little green light in front of him, he's fine.
I brought the talons down another 10 feet so the spider hung between us. Well, I happen to be very handy with a Waldo, Polotsky.
Fine, you're gonna get hurt.
Polotsky, will you stop coming on like an overprotective aunt? I don't need another one.
You're very drunk, Vine.
Yeah, but I'm no clumsy kid boy who's gonna mess up your equipment.
If you do, you'll be a...
Shut up and watch. I pulled the chain out of my pouch and tossed it onto the concrete floor. In the orange light, you couldn't tell whether the cage was brass or silver.
What's that?
The claws came down, and the fine point tips, millimeters above the floor, closed on the ecologerium.
Oh, hey, I haven't seen one of those since I was 10. What are you going to do with it? Those are 500-to-1 strength, you know. You're going to break it.
That's right. Break this one, too.
Oh, come on, let me see it first.
I lifted the globe. Could be an eggshell. Drunk or sober, I can handle this damn equipment, Polotsky.
I haven't seen one for years. Used to have one.
You mean it wasn't spirited back from some distant galaxy by a Golden from some technology beyond our limited ken?
Product of the home spiral. Been around since the 50s.
I raised it over Polotsky's extended hand.
Well, they're supposed to be very educational. What do you want to break it for?
I never saw one.
Oh, you came from somewhere off the roots, didn't you? They weren't that common.
Don't break it.
I want to.
Why, Vine?
Because I want to get out, and if it's not that globe, it's going to be somebody's head. Inside the gauntlet, my hand began to quiver. The talons jerked. Palachki caught the globe and jumped back.
Fine.
I'm hanging on here at the edge. I'm useless with a bunch of monsters and fools. The talons swung, contracted, clashed on each other. And when the children get so bad you can't even reach them. The claw opened, reached for Palachki, who jumped back in the half-dark.
Damn it, Vine!
Can't even reach the children anymore. The talons stopped shaking, came slowly back, nodding. I want to break something and get out, very childishly. Yes, because nobody is paying any attention to me. The fist jumped. Even when I'm trying to help, I don't want to hurt anybody anymore. I swear it, so help me, I swear.
Vine, take off the glove and listen.
I raised the slave hand because it was about to scrape the cement.
Vine, I want to pay some attention to you.
Slowly, Palachki walked back into the orange light.
If you've been sending me kids for about 5 years now, coming around, checking up on them, helping them out of the stupid scrapes they get in, they haven't all been ratless. I like kids, too. That's why I take them on. I think what you do is pretty great. Part of me loves kids. Another part of me loves you.
Oh, Palachki.
Oh, it doesn't embarrass me. I love you a little. I wouldn't mind loving you a lot. More than once I've thought about asking you to start a group.
Please, Palachki. I have had too many weird things happen to me this week. Not tonight, huh?
Well, love shouldn't frighten you no matter when or how it comes, Vine. Don't run from it. Marriage between us? Yeah, that'd be a little hard for somebody like you at first, but you get used to it before long. Then when the kids came around, they'd be...
I'll send Sandy over. He's the big-hearted marrying kind. Maybe he's about ready to try again.
Fine, don't go out like that. Stay for just a minute.
Palachki, I am just not that goddamn drunk. I threw the glove on the table.
Please, Vine.
You're going to use your gun to keep me here?
Don't be like that.
I hope the kids I send over here appreciate you more than I do right now. I'm sorry I busted in here. Good night. I turned from the table. 9,000 miles away, the Stellarplex turned too. Circles of silver dropped through the roof. Behind the metal cage of the relaxed slave claw, I saw Palachki's large, injured eyes, circles of crushed turquoise, glistening now. And 9 feet away, someone said,
Ma'am?
Palachki glanced over her shoulder.
Anne, you awake?
Anne stepped into the silver light, rubbing his neck.
That office chair is pretty hard, sister.
He's here?
Sure. He didn't have any place to stay, so I let him sleep in the office while I finished up some work in the back. Vine, I meant what I said. Leave if you want, but not like this. Untwist.
Palachki, you're very sweet. You're fun in bed, and a good mechanic, too. But I've been there before. Asking me to join a group is like asking me to do something obscene. I know what I'm worth.
Well, I'm also a good businesswoman. Don't think that didn't enter my head when I thought about marrying you.
Anne came and stood beside her. He was breathing hard, the way an animal does when you wake it all of a sudden. Palachki, you said it. I didn't. I'm a mess. That's why I'm not with my own group now.
You're not always like this. I've never seen you touch a drop before.
For a while, it used to happen with disgusting frequency. Why do you think my group dropped me?
It must have been a while ago. I've known you a long time. So you've grown up since then. Now, it only happens every half dozen years or so. Congratulations. Come have some coffee. And run in the office and plug in the pot. I showed you where it was.
Anne turned like something blown by the whirlwind and was gone in the shadow.
Come on.
She took my arm and I came with her. Before we left the light, I saw my reflection in the polished steel tool cabinet door. Oh no. I pulled away from her. No, I'd better go home now.
Why? Anne's making coffee.
The kid. I don't want the kid to see me like this.
Oh, he already has. Won't hurt him. Come on.
When I walked into Palachki's office, I felt I didn't have a damn thing left. No, I had one. I decided to give it away. When Anne turned to me with the cup, I put my hands on his shoulders. He jumped, but not enough to spill the coffee. First and last bit of alcoholic advice for the evening, kid boy. Even if you are crazy, don't go around telling people who are not golden how they've trapped you. That's like going to Earth and complimenting a nigger on his great sense of rhythm. He may be able to tap 7 with one hand against 13 with the other while whistling a tone row. It still shows remarkable naivete about the way things are. That's one of the things known about the world I come from throughout the galaxy. I mean primitive. Anne ducked from under my hands, put the coffee on the desk, and turned back.
I didn't say you trapped us.
You said we treated you lousy and exploited you, which we may, and that this trapped you.
I said you exploited us, which you do, and that we were trapped. I didn't say by what.
Palachki sat down on the desk, picked up my coffee, and sipped it. All right. Tell me how you're trapped.
Oh, I'm sorry. I started drinking your
coffee. Shut up. How are you trapped, Anne? He moved his shoulders around as though he were trying to get them comfortable.
It started in Tiber 44 cluster. Golden were coming back with really bad psychic shock.
Yeah, I'd heard about it. That was a few years back. Anne's face started to twitch. The muscles around his eyes twisted below the skin.
Something out there.
I put my hand on the back of his neck, my thumb in the soft spot behind his ear, and began to stroke, the way you get a cat to calm down. Take it easy. Just tell me.
Thanks. We found them first in Tiber 44, but then they turned up all over on half the planets and every galaxy that could support any life, and on a lot more that shouldn't have been able to at all.
I kept rubbing. His breathing slowed again.
I guess we have such a funny psychology that working with them, studying them, even thinking about them too much, there's something about them that changes our sense of reality. The shock was bad.
Anne, to be trapped, there has to be somewhere you can't go. For it to bug you, there has to be something else around that can. He nodded under my hand, then straightened up.
I'm all right now. Just tired. You want to know where and what?
Palachki had put down the coffee now and was dangling the chain. Anne whirled to stare at it directly.
Where? Other universes.
Galaxies further out?
No. Completely different matrices of time and space.
Staring at the swinging ball seemed to calm him even more.
No physical or temporal connection to this one at all.
Well, sort of parallel.
A parallel hell. There's nothing parallel about them. Out of the billions to the billionth of them, most are hundreds of times the size of ours, and empty. There are a few, though, whose entire spatial extent is even smaller than this galaxy. Some of them are completely dense to us because, even though there seems to be matter in them, distributed more or less as in this universe, there's no electromagnetic activity at all. No radio waves, no heat, no light.
The globe swung. The voice was a whisper. I closed my fist around the globe and took it from Palachki. How do you know about them? Who brings back the information? Who is it who can get out? Blinking, Anne looked back at me. When he told me, I began to laugh. To accommodate the shifting reality tensions, the psychotic personality that is Golden is totally labile. Anne laughed with me, not knowing why. He explained through his torrential hysteria how, with the micro-microsurgical techniques from Tiber 44, they had read much of the information from a direct examination of the creature's nervous system, which covered its surface like velvet. It could take intense cold or heat, a range of pressure from vacuum to hundreds of pounds per square millimeter, but a fairly small amount of ultraviolet destroyed the neural synapses, and they died. They were small and deceptively organic, because in an organic environment they appeared to breathe and eat. They had four sexes, two of which carried the young. They had clusters of retractable sense organs that first appeared to be eyes, but were sensitive to 12 distinct senses, stimulation for three of which didn't even exist in our continuum. They traveled around on four suction cups when using kinetic motion for ordinary traversal of space, were small, and looked furry. The only way to make them jump universes was to scare the life out of them. At which point, they just disappeared. Anne kneaded his stomach under his belt to ease the pain from so much laughter.
Working with them at Tiber 44 just cracked up a whole bunch of Golden. They had to be sent home for therapy. We still can't think about them directly, but it's easier for us to control what we think about than for you. Well, that's part of being Golden. I even had one of them for a pet up until yesterday. The damn creatures are either totally apathetic or vicious. Mine was a baby, all white and soft.
He held out his arm.
Yesterday it bit me and disappeared.
On his wrist, there was a bluish place centered on which was a crescent of pinpricks.
Lucky it was a baby. The bites infect easily.
Palachki started drinking from my cup again, as Anne and I started laughing all over. As I walked back that night, black coffee stopped in my belly. There are certain directions in which you cannot go, choose one in which you can move as far as you want. Sandy said that? He did. But there was something about Sandy, very much like someone golden. It doesn't matter how, he's going on. Under a street lamp, I stopped and lifted up the apologerium. The reproductive function. Was it primary or adjunctive? If, I thought, with the whiskey lucidity always suspect at dawn, you consider the whole ecological balance a single organism, it's adjunctive, a vital reparative process along with sleeping and eating to the primary process, which is living, working, growing. I put the chain around my neck. I was still half soused and it felt bad, but I howled. Androcles, is drunken laughter appropriate to mourn all my dead children? Perhaps not. But tell me, Raffa. Tell me, Allegra. What better way to launch my live ones who are golden into night? I don't know. I know I laughed. Then I put my fists in my overall pouch and crunched along the edge towards home, as on my left, the whirlwind roared.
The Mind's Eye Theater has presented Samuel R. Delaney's The Star Pit, directed by Daniel Landau. Phoebe Ray was Polashki, Joseph, Vime's mother, reporter, lady from Carlson's and Vime's wife. Joan Tanner was Antony and assorted children. Jerry Matz was Sandy, the sailor, Pilot, the golden, Vime's husband. Walter Harris was Ratlet, Androcles, and the Golden Boy. And Randa Haynes was Allegra, the Golden Girl, and Antony's mother. The music for the Star Pit was composed and performed by Susan Schwiers. The narration was by the author.
You are tuned to WPAI, New York. 99.5 FM.
You gotta get me my freedom!
Streaming on www.wbai.org. Freedom of Speech Radio.
Oh, a happy day.
Oh, happy day.
When Jesus wore.
When Jesus wore.
Oh, when he wore.
City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null.
And nice to be with you today. And to the people in this audience, I want to thank all of you for taking your time to be with us. We have a lot of good things to share with you. I met today with Bertold Reimers. And we're coming up with something that's absolutely unique. I just want to confirm that we can do it. And as soon as we can do it, I'll be sharing it with you. It's a way for all of us to appreciate good health and get healthier. I hope to announce that on tomorrow's show. Today, I was asked by Tony, who should be joining us shortly, if we could offer something to raise some funds for the station. And I said, what do you suggest? And he said, well, how about if we did red stuff, because it helps people, they like it, it's something of substance. I said, okay. So what we're offering today is the following. We're offering anyone who calls and pledges to the station $99, we're offering them a jar of red stuff. What is it? Well, it's a raw, all-natural powder. It's made from 18 fruits with enzymes, and it's loaded with nutrition. It's vegan, it's non-GMO, it's gluten-free, and it contains 10,000 valued ORAC per scoop, per serving. Now, ORAC is a measurement of antioxidant. Now, in the average American diet, I'm going to guess that the average person gets anywhere from 200 to maybe 500 ORAC in a day with all the foods they eat. This has got 10,000 in one scoop. So this is a superstar of ORAC antioxidant activity. And it's made up of watermelon, cherries, strawberries, blueberries, raspberries, apples, grapes, bananas, pomegranates, papaya, prunes, acerola, goji, cranberries, acai, bilberries, grapeseed extract, pomegranate extract, and that's all the active ingredients. And what happens is they get all the fruit, and they bring it in, they wash it down, then they press it to get the juice out, and then they dry the juice at a low temperature, generally around 88 degrees, so it's a living food. And that's the powder. There's just nothing else there. It's terrific for you. In fact, we all know that we should be having our fruits and vegetables. And ideally, in the perfect world, you'd be sitting each day and having your fruits and vegetables. Now, the average American doesn't even get three servings of fruits and vegetables a day. Do you remember how absurd it was one time when Ronald Reagan made ketchup of vegetables so that at least people would get at least one, kids especially, get one vegetable a day because they had some ketchup with their French fries or hot dogs? Well, we need ideally about 11 servings of fruits and vegetables a day. We're not getting it. Only a tiny percentage, probably 1% of the American population, are having as many fruits and vegetables I believe they actually need. And why? What's so big deal about fruits? Well, I'll just focus on fruits. Reggie, fruits are the catalysts of change at the DNA level. Each fruit contains from dozens to hundreds of different chemicals called phytochemicals. And many of these phytochemicals are known to repair DNA. They are powerful antioxidants. They're free radical scavengers, meaning that when you have a free radical in your body, which ages the cell and damages the cell, it can trap it, neutralize it. We know that these are loaded with enzymes, which are the catalysts of life. We know that they're good sources also of fiber and chlorophyll. In fact, when you look at the totality of what you're getting, you're getting a huge number of important elements and only 64 calories, so it's perfect for diabetics, glycemics, people overweight, and people have to be on a caloric-restricted diet. So just imagine you're getting 18 different fruits per day, 18, and you're getting them not as the whole fruit, because let's face it, if you had an apple, you could reasonably eat one apple. Try eating two apples at the same time. It's hard to do. But if you juiced both apples, that would give you about 4 or 5 ounces of juice. You could easily drink that amount. Now, what is juice? It's about 97% water. So now wick off the water, and what you have left is what was really the most powerful and important part of the apple. So you take an apple, you reduce the total weight of the apple by making it into a juice. You reduce the water in the juice to what's the powerful compound. And that's what I've done with Red Stuff. And everywhere I travel, and I travel a lot, I always take my bottles of stuffs, you know, Red Stuff, Green Stuff, Cruciferous Stuff, Fiber Stuff, Muscle Stuff. And because there's a lot of places where, A, I don't have time to stop and eat, and B, if I did, there's no place for me to eat because I'm a vegan and I eat organic. So this way, I'm able to give myself the nourishment. Now, in the morning, I make a smoothie, and in that smoothie, I put multiple different stuffs, but Red Stuff is one of the two most important I put in there. And I also put some, you know, coconut oil and and some walnuts or pumpkin seeds or the nut pumpkin seed nut butter or sunflower seed butter. And butter doesn't mean it's dairy. It just means that they've ground it up so it's very easy to digest. It's just nothing more than pumpkin seeds ground up. Nothing's added. But these seeds and nuts have oils in them. So it's very easy to spread it. It's very easy to add to any syrup. So, and we should have pumpkin seeds. Pumpkin seeds are terrific in the amount of zinc, but also they have minerals that are very important for men for their phosphate. But back to the fruits. Fruits really energize. I always suggest people, you have your fruits and vegetables every day because the vegetables give you the cleansing. They help cleanse the blood. They revitalize the system. They chelate out toxins. But the fruits are their energizers. And since a lot of people don't eat fruit on a regular basis, or if they do eat fruit, it's not a healthy fruit, or they eat dried fruit, which is too concentrated in calories. But here you're getting the superstars. For example, if you were to go, Reggie, to Google, and you put in, let's say, blueberries, and you'll see all the blueberries scientific study, or blueberries medicinal value, or blueberries and health. You would be able to get all these studies on what blueberries and the phytonutrients and polyphenols that are in blueberries do for your brain. And I make sure I get blueberries every single day. If there's the one berry I make sure I get, and then I also get pomegranate. Pomegranate, look under pomegranate and epithelial. Epithelium is your lining of your arteries, and that is so important because due to the poor diet that people consume at different times in their life, or alcohol, or soft drinks, or high fructose corn syrup, the things we put in our body damage the epithelium. There's all these cuts, and then the body tries to heal itself by making a scab over it. Well, the danger is that you have so many of those little scabs that can break off. When that breaks off and joins with red blood cells, you can end up with a clot and have a heart attack and stroke, and that's how a lot of heart attacks and strokes occur. So when you're having pomegranate, it's one of the most single, if not the single most important nutrient for your epithelium. And then blueberries are phenomenal for your brain. And I sit every day and I counsel people who are deadly ill. I counsel people with irreversible illnesses, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, ALS, multiple sclerosis, advanced memory loss, cancers, heart disease, people who've had strokes, the really bad diseases I help people with. And we have pretty good success. The more they can adhere to protocols, the more chance they have of recovering some or in many cases all their health. And at the top of the list, I talk about you got to get more juices into your body. You have to get more of the nutrients that are in those juices into your body. Why? Because the diet most people eat is a denatured diet. It is dead. It is a dead person's diet. There's no vital life force in it. There's no enzymes in the substance. There's no ORAC. There's no antioxidant activity. Now, Google antioxidants, and you'll see thousands upon thousands of studies on how important antioxidants are. Now Google free radicals, and then Google inflammatory agents like cytokines, or tumor necrosis factor alpha, or the prostaglandins, and you'll see, wow, you mean I don't have to do anything bad, just normal living creates free radicals. Yeah, every millisecond you're creating tens of millions, hundreds of millions of free radicals, normal part of oxidation. When I breathe in, oxygen goes in, which is good. I oxygenate my tissue. Lungs allow that to be carried out, and the blood carries my oxygen, and then it goes in the cell, and it releases the oxygen, which is innervating to the cell, invigorating to the cell, and then carbon dioxide comes back out, and as when you exhale, that is carbon dioxide leaving the lungs, the spent fuel of the body. That little exchange between oxygen going in and carbon dioxide coming out, you have a byproduct. It is called oxidative stress. And oxidative stress leads to more inflammation. More inflammation leads to more cells being damaged. In fact, the best science I could find on this showed that the average cell, now mind you, there's some debate about how many cells the human body has, but that depends upon the size of the body, the age of the body. It can have